This is the NHL Season Preview Show with Pat Steinberg, Satyar Shah, and Nick Alberga on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
3 seconds left, and lightning has struck twice. 363 days after the start of the 2019-2020 season, the Tampa Bay Lightning have won the Stanley Cup for the second time in their history.
All right, so the Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup in Edmonton 106 days ago. Finished off the longest, most bizarre NHL season we've ever lived through. But still, Stanley Cup got handed out. We finished a season in the midst of a worldwide pandemic. And now, fast forward 4 months later, here we are on the eve of a brand new season kicking off. We're playing 56 games over 4 months, 31 buildings, 4 brand new divisions. We're still living in a pandemic and about to observe what I think is fair to say the most unprecedented full season in NHL history. Yet had you asked me or most people back in March or April if we were ever going to be at this point, a day away from puck drop on a brand new season, not even a restarted season, I don't know how many people would have believed you. Tip your hat to the NHL, the NHLPA, all the health authorities that had to work together with the two entities to figure this all out and put together the most challenging season in NHL history. It's going to be weird, certainly going to be unpredictable, and more than anything else, I think I speak for everyone who loves this sport. We're just ready to have it back and ready to drop the puck on Wednesday. Welcome to the NHL Preview Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. My name is Pat Steinberg. We are headquartered in 3 different spots today. So Pat Steinberg here at Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. We've got Nick Alberga at Sportsnet 590 in Toronto and Sat Shah at Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. And gents, I'm ready to rock and roll. Sat, you had the most fun playoff run of the 3 of us in the summertime. I would imagine that things are pretty ready to rock and roll in Vancouver too.
Well, when they're not fighting over the cap and the fan base isn't entrenched in civil war, yeah, they're super psyched about this season. I gotta say though, guys, the Canucks run was a lot of fun. The team did surprise and it did exceed expectations. They have a lot of young talent, and I do think outside of all the fighting and cap concerns and all the issues we've seen Canucks fans have with one another, the general sentiment is excitement for the season. Because when you have Pettersson and Hughes and some of the other guys, why wouldn't you be excited to watch hockey?
Guys, I'll just continue to refresh my Twitter waiting for that Travis Green extension that's still yet to come. It's great to be with you guys. I'm fired up about NHL hockey, and I can't wait to see this North Division unfold, boys.
Yep, we get an opportunity to see all 7 Canadian teams in the same division, and throughout the next couple of hours, we're going to dive deep in all 3 of the teams in our market, the Maple Leafs, the Canucks, the Flames, and take a look around the rest of the North Division and into the other brand new 3 divisions in the NHL. But guys, I continue to be amazed at what the NHL has been able to accomplish going back to when this league shut down and everything shut down in March on March 12th. They were able to complete this highly successful return to play in the summer and fall, and now they're ready to go with a new season less than 4 months later. And I'm curious, like Nick, you observed all of this in the biggest hotbed in the country and the biggest hotbed in the hockey world. When it's all said and done, when we're 5 or 10 years removed from this whole thing, how do we look back at these fever dreams of 2020 and 2021?
Yeah, pretty creative and fascinating. I know our colleague of ours, Anthony Stewart, made fun of me because I live close to both locations where they did the hotels and the Hotel X here in Toronto and Scotiabank Arena. And I actually did a huge walk in the summer before the bubbles got underway and checked it out, had some videos out there. But I just think it was so tremendous how they came together. And you can never preach enough, you know, the patience that the NHL showed, even the fact that they're close to going to Vancouver, close to going to Vegas. I know the fluidity has been pretty crazy, and it's pretty, you know, tremendous to comprehend and understand that the second wave has been far worse, we think, than the first wave. But all in all, it was really, really seamless. I mean, how do you make anything, you know, negative about the fact that they went into a bubble and had 0 positive cases? So I think you're so right in bringing that up off the top. And Sat, I'm sure you can echo in here as well. Just, you know, the job that the NHL did in general has just been terrific through this whole thing.
It has been fantastic. And you're right. this shouldn't be something that should upset anybody, especially with the way it has all unfolded. Not putting stress on the local economies in each province, of course, right? I know Alberta was really happy to host the return to play because they saw some economic benefits to it. And we haven't seen, you know, an outbreak that leads to a lot of issues in the greater public. And I think that's the big chief concern most citizens have, even those who are not hockey fans. What we've tried to figure out in this pandemic is be safe, but also how can we survive on a day-to-day basis? A lot of small businesses have that issue, right? A lot of people are trying to figure out, how can I stay safe, but how can I work and provide for my family? And governments are trying to figure out the best way to figure out to do both to some degree. And that's where the NHL is at. And considering financial costs this has put on the league, it's great that they've done so, and they provided the opportunity for us to be able to cover the game and watch the game and these players to play. But one thing I will say, the NHL will still benefit from this because the franchise values are going up exponentially. So I don't want to hear too much about, oh, we're losing a lot of money in the NHL. Trust me, you guys are getting all that money back in the future.
And a TV deal, right?
Yeah.
Well, can you imagine? I know that on Monday, Gary Bettman talked about how the losses are in the billions, or it starts with a B anyway. But can you imagine if they didn't play, the long-term damage that would have done to the brand? I mean, yes, in the immediacy, the black and red numbers, yeah. This year is going to be big time in the red, but I think you'd be even more in the red if you didn't end up figuring this out. So I think we're all glad that they're back playing. They're going to play 56 starting on Wednesday. No preseason games, short training camps. And I don't know, like Sat, I really don't know what to expect. I remember the 48-game season back in 2013, 8 years ago, and it definitely took some time with no preseason games for teams to find their game. Like in this market, I don't think Calgary ever found their game, but do we expect long adjustment periods? Do we expect a few weeks of some growing pains knowing that training camps have been so short?
I think it would be foolish not to expect some of that, right? I mean, we are going to see a lot of weird things. I would bet on chaos this season. And because you're talking about a lot of games in a short period of time. You're right about, you know, that 48-game season. This one's even more strange. Shorter training camp, no preseason. You're having guys come away from quarantine situations. And I know people have gotten used to figuring out how to stay in shape, at least pro athletes, within the restrictions they've had in each market. But you're talking about a higher degree of difficulty. Chaos will be the theme of this season, I believe, and the injuries will play such a big part of it. It's easy to project here, Nick, and I know we look at, you know, say Toronto, which is super talented and so deep. But a lot of our projections this season is going to be guesswork because a lot of unforeseen circumstances will arise.
I don't know about you guys. I am tired of breaking down the North Division in terms of rankings, right? We've been doing it for like so long. It seems like 2 years now. But I think you're right. I mean, honestly, you know, with all due respect to Ottawa, who I think is up and coming, certainly I love some of the moves they made, some of the youngsters they have in there, but I just don't think they're ready to win right now. You could probably make a case for six of the seven teams to at least make the playoffs. I think three or four to contend for the number one spot. And I think ultimately, yes, I think chaotic is a really, really good word to use. You know, I'm wondering, and you guys I'm sure will chime in, just the goaltending aspect, right? Because these guys will not get any in-game simulation. If you want to include scrimmages, okay, but it's just not the same as playing another team where you actually care about winning and want to beat them. And that's why, you know, the lines came out the other day for the opening games in the first couple days of the season, and I'm inclined to take the over on everything because I expect goals, goals, and more goals. But then, you know, you wonder, too, from a game plan, you know, point of view, these coaches have been working feverishly and nonstop, you would think, for the last 6, 7, 8 months. And it's much simpler, I would say, to game plan for six or seven teams, in this case, six teams, seven in the other divisions, as opposed to the entire league, right? Because they won't see anybody until a potential new look conference final, right?
Yep, absolutely. And like the, you know, markets in two of the markets that we're in, brand new goaltenders, Braden Holt being in Vancouver, Jacob Markstrom here in Calgary, and very little reps, very little lead time going into their first seasons on big new contracts. So I absolutely think goaltending is going to be a big time story early on. It's the NHL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We got Nick Alberga in Toronto, Satchon in Vancouver. My name is Pat Steinberg here in Calgary. Coming up in 5 minutes, in depth on the Toronto Maple Leafs after a disappointing loss to Columbus in the summertime. And guys, part of this 56-game season, a brand new 56-game schedule. a brand new divisional alignment for this year only as well. For the first time ever, all seven Canadian teams in the North Division. Nick, you just talked about it, kind of tired of breaking it all down and stacking all the teams together. It's true. You're like, let's just drop the puck. But it's been my contention since this news came out that of all the new divisions, this is going to be the most competitive. This is going to be the one with the most parity. I see so little between six of the seven teams. Just a quick overarching handicap. How do you see this North Division?
Yeah, not to mention the battle of national supremacy, right? I mean, the rivalries, even in Alberta, you know, even in the province of Ontario, I'd love to see Ottawa and Toronto ramping up again the way we saw it, what, 15, 20 years ago with the numerous battles of Ontario. Montreal, Toronto's always fun. You know, it's going to be, you know, great from that aspect to see these teams go at it multiple times, seven, eight, nine times this season, and really start the hatred, start to brew. And I think just in general, it's so great for this country, especially in these times, to be able to come together and to, you know, have it similar to old times where you're ragging on people for being a fan of this team and that, and just having some good fun with this, because this is, you know, as we know how long this thing's been, we need any positivity we can take. So that's, you know, that's my fascination on this division is, you know, on paper, we've done our best to break it all down. Now I want to see what happens on the ice set.
Oh, and I want to see the surprises, right? I mean, it's one thing to project this out. I want to see which team either falls on his face and which team really surprises and which players emerge. Every single season, we have a player or two in Canada kind of emerge as a star. And sometimes these things kind of come out of nowhere. That's what I'm intrigued to see, because a lot of these teams, guys, are forced to play a lot of young guys and take chances on players this season based on the entire circumstances. So the unknown really intrigues me. Do we see some storylines that will be here long term, or do we see a lot of flash in the pan? And this season's going to be a lot of that, right? Like, no team's going to apologize for getting lucky four or five games in a row. And that might be enough to lift you up, and how you get off to a start. Like, I am fascinated to see if one of these teams we consider good gets off to a rough start and how they find a way to recover and the pressure in doing so. Those storylines to me are going to be intriguing. The drama that will unfold as the season goes on.
Yeah, nine times at least for each opponent in terms of meetings, and in a couple cases for each team, 10 different games against one opponent. Cannot wait. The North Division is going to be chock full of drama as we are just getting started. This is the NHL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Shot goes wide of the net. Final seconds coming off. And the Columbus Blue Jackets are full mark for advancing here in a fifth and deciding game and winning it by a score of 3-0.
So that's the last time we saw the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's Joe Bowen on Sportsnet 590 in Toronto and the Maple Leafs Radio Network. In Game 5 of their qualifying round series against the Columbus Blue Jackets, did not go well. Disappointing finish. Made it 15 straight seasons without a playoff round win in Toronto. And yet, as you can expect, you take a look at that roster and you see all that talent. The expectations remain sky high one night before their season opener against the Montreal Canadiens. We continue on the NHL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We've got Sat Shaw in Vancouver, Nick Alberga in Toronto. My name is Pat Steinberg here in Calgary, and we dive right in on the Toronto Maple Leafs. No playoff wins since this new era led by Auston Matthews. No playoff series wins anyway. And Auston Matthews, Mitch Marner, and this new era of Maple Leafs began. Nick, you're closest to it. You're in the market every day after what we saw in the summertime and what we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years. Tell us about the impatience level in Toronto right now.
Oh, it's very high. And, you know, I'm still not over the fact of that whole playoff series against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Just how ironic the fact that a team known for its goal scoring was shut out twice in five games in that series. And all anybody can do in this market was rip on the goaltending, right? I just think such an easy excuse to talk about your goaltending and say it needs to be better. I think from that standpoint, I have more faith in Frederik Andersen than most people. He's in a contract year, so he's playing for money. But I think ultimately it'll be the big boys that have to lead this team. We know this by now. I think we all three of us expect this team to at least be a playoff team this season. But Auston Matthews, can he take that leap forward? I think the expectation maybe from the Matthews point of view is to maybe be a guy who's in the Art Ross conversation. I think his attachment to Mitch Marner 5-on-5 will be integral to that, clearly. And I think they want to see what they have in their bottom six, right? A lot of changes. They got the vet Joe Thornton in the fold. He's going to play on the top line. you know, but guys like Mikheyev and Zach Hyman and Alex Barabanov and, you know, Wayne Simmonds and Jason Spezza, can these guys help the big guys out with some depth scoring? And then, as we'll probably talk about ad nauseum for every team in this division, how much better is this team defensively? On paper, we think they're better. And Pat, you can attest to this with the acquisition of TJ Brody. He's going to play on the number one pairing with Morgan Rielly. They bring in a Zach Bogosian, fresh off a Stanley Cup with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Mikko Lehtinen, KHL star, I guess you want to call him, comes over. But we'll see how that translates to the NHL level. So on paper, this Maple Leafs team is much better than the one we saw in the bubble. But it's another thing to go out there and prove it, right?
I think the big thing is going to be how many of those defensemen take that step. I would look at Toronto's back end and say it probably has the most potential in the Canadian division. I don't know if it's the best defense in the division. You know, we'll talk about some of the other teams as it goes on. But if, for instance, Sandin emerges or Lehtinen emerges or Dermott gets better, you have internal improvements. I am very skeptical about TJ Brody and his defensive play. I'm not sure that that's an upgrade at all over what Tyson Barry did defensively. And we all know that in-zone defense was a big issue for the Leafs, especially with their back end. But with the way they move the puck, with that potential on the back end, if things align, there is a lot of untapped potential on this Leafs team that already has a lot of tapped high-end potential that is already producing. So that's what's so enticing about the Leafs. I think they're the best team on paper, but if some of these guys hit, then it could be even next-level good.
Well, and having seen TJ firsthand in this market over the last decade, and certainly the last three or four seasons, Sat, last year, he was really good. Like that defensive play that used to be one of his hallmarks and his angles and his reads, that was one of the things that had him in contention for Team Canada, and all of a sudden he was being talked about as one of the best young and up-and-coming defensemen. Mm-hmm. That kind of leveled off. His game fell off for two or three years and then seemed to come back last year. So if the Leafs get what the Flames got from Brody last year, I think that they're going to really like it. If they get what the Flames had for the two or three years prior, I don't know, because those two or three years, you're right, that defensive game really dropped off and was a big-time hole, and yet here he was in the bubble, was probably their best defenseman and was probably, behind Mark Giordano in the regular season last year, their number two defenseman. So I do think it could pay off for them in the long run, and I think there's a chance that could be a really nice fit, but it all depends on what TJ Brody, the Maple Leafs, end up getting.
That's the big thing. And Nick, I mean, you can attest to that Toronto team overall. And part of this could also be, you know, we know TJ Brody is from the area, and it was like a life, you know, lifelong dream come true. And comfort can go a long way as well. And I will say this about the Leafs, and Nick, and you know this far better covering that team on a day-to-day basis. When they bring guys in, they also have a real plan for how to utilize those players. The Barry one didn't work out, but I'm sure there are lessons that were learned. And based on how these guys approach things, especially Dubas and that front office, they learn from mistakes, I would guess, based on how they do things. And also, they probably have a plan in place to allow Brody to be the best version of himself. If that comes to fruition, then my concerns are definitely alleviated on the back end. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think, you know, the most, you know, promising thing I think I like with the acquisition of TJ Brody is that he can skate, and what he's done in the past for Mark Giordano and vice versa. I mean, it always helps when you work on a daily basis with a Norris winning defenseman in that. But I think he can help push Morgan Rielly, you know, and that's taking nothing away from Tyson Barry. I just think it's a much better fit here in the top four in the back end, adding TJ Brody. You know, the curious thing for me, guys, you know, to broaden the conversation is just in general how the narrative has changed in Toronto in terms of the mindset of management, right? They were so against, you know, adding some pugnacity, to steal Brian Burke's word, some grittiness, some toughness. Next thing you know, the offseason happens. They get pushed around, I felt, by the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, Wayne Simmonds comes in, Zach Bogosian. You know, their attention to getting stronger and tougher to play against is quite you know, visible, which is intriguing to me because, you know, in this Kyle Dubas era, it's been all about analytics, and it doesn't matter if you hit. If you can score and hold the puck, then you're going to be great. So that's my fascination, too, with this overhaul, if you want to call it, here in the offseason for this team, Pat.
Nick, do you get the sense that, you know, Sheldon Keefe comes in, this is kind of his first season starting training camp? I know that he got the training camp to get ready for the return to play, but that was such a bizarre circumstance. This is kind of his first real training camp as head coach of the team. Like, is this a scenario where he can now start to make this group more his own? Tell us your observations on Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we've already started to see it out of camp. Like even a guy he had, with the Toronto Marlies first, the American Hockey League, and Pierre Engvall doesn't crack this roster. Heck, doesn't even crack the taxi squad roster. A guy who had one goal in the last 25 games, including the bubble play, which just wasn't good enough. And he's not good enough defensively to even be in the bottom six. So I think for sure, and that's why we're starting to see a couple different, even when Mike Babcock left, Sheldon Keefe came in. You didn't see the, as much attachment of guys like Zach Hyman, guys that were big Babcock faves in the top six. And I think we'll continue to see this sprinkled throughout this lineup. I just think in general, this brain trust, it's clearly and obviously a massive year. You mentioned the numbers off the top. It's time for the Maple Leafs to at least win a series. No excuse of Boston, no excuse of Columbus, no excuse of Tampa. It's a different division with mostly different teams, with exception of the Montreal Canadiens and the Ottawa Senators. So it's go time. And I think the expectations are clearly growing. The pressure will mount on Kyle Dubas and Sheldon Keefe because he is Kyle Dubas's guy. And I think if they don't see positive movement in the standings, and that means at least winning a playoff series, who knows what could happen long term here.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if things do fall flat, that the pressure does mount on Dubas for sure. And because a lot of the capital has been spent, right? They spent a lot of their capital with assets and cap space, and they had, their guys in ELCs, their top guys, and that window has passed. So all the stuff we talked about, how the Leafs were set for the future, they have all this capital, they have ELCs, and we're going to take advantage, that hasn't hit yet, right? And at some point, you're right, it goes the other way, and you have to change the direction of the organization. But I do think it's interesting, Nick, to your point of look at the guys they brought in to try to bring the quote-unquote pugnacity and play that toughness. But more than anything, I see it as a departure from strictly looking at team building from an academic standpoint. I love analytics. I'm all about analytics. But you still need guys that win puck battles. You still need guys on the back end that separate the man from the puck behind your own net. You need forwards that know how to track back, win those board battles, and be outlets. And look at some of the guys they brought in, right? I mean, Zach Bogosian, he might have some issues, but he is good at a few things. One is separating the man from the puck, winning those battles in front, clearing the front of the net. And it sounds, like old school, boring hockey stuff. And I hate overspending on those types of players, but for $1 million, he can provide that role. You don't want to be spending $4 or $5 million on a guy in your bottom six. We see that in Vancouver. We'll get to that coming up in a bit. Or pay too much for big physical defensemen that can only do one thing. But unless you have players that can do certain things and fill those intangibles from a straight up practical hockey playing standpoint, especially in zone defending and getting guys that win those crucial battles along the boards, like it provides everything. Like what happened with the Leafs oftentimes? They get spun around in their own zone and guys could just win battles and they just get open space all the time. Yeah, you don't want to overspend on those things, but you need to stop teams from cycling you as much as they have. And I do think the guys they've added should allow them to break the cycle of offense in their own zone.
Yeah, and I think to be fair too, most of these acquisitions, Pat and Sat, I think were made the expectation this is going to be a playoff team, right? You look at Wayne Simmonds, what can he do in the Stanley Cup playoffs? We just saw what Zach Bogosian could do in a depth role with the Tampa Bay Lightning. While Joe Thornton hasn't won a cup, he's been in a Stanley Cup. I think he's going to do wonders for chemistry inside that locker room. Pretty much play on the same role that Patrick Marleau played a couple years ago. But as we know, to start the season, Thornton will be on the top line with Matthews and Marner. So, I was mulling this over the last couple months. Like, who faces the most pressure to win right now? I think clearly there's a couple teams that we're going to be conversing about today, clearly with this North Division. But I think among them has to be the Toronto Maple Leafs. Everything we've just listed over the last 10 minutes or so, not to mention, I think the next step, if this doesn't work this season, in my opinion, there's a lot of pressure. If it doesn't work, you have to look at making a big time trade, right, Pat?
Yeah. Well, and there was a lot made of we can and we will, and Kyle Dubas did. But it's right, like the Sat's point, it is put them in a situation where it limits them in trying to address the totality of the team and add some other really important pieces. And that's kind of why we saw them have to go with some of the smaller additions during the offseason. You're locked on the NHL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. 10 minutes to the Vancouver Canucks get better this offseason after being one shot away from the Western Conference Final. But right now, we're focused on the Toronto Maple Leafs. And one of those, it's a high-profile addition, but in terms of how it affects the salary cap, not so much. 1 year, $700,000 for Joe Thornton, a future Hall of Famer. Now he joins the Toronto Maple Leafs after 15 seasons in San Jose. Sad. So what? I mean, we've seen him put on lines in training camp with some big name players, but what are fair, what are realistic expectations in year one of Joe Thornton in blue and white?
Power play production, good leadership, and not being an anchor defensively. Realistically, I don't think you can expect a lot more. His presence in the room should help. He has the experience. He is a good guy from everything that I gather, right? Like, he's a fun guy to be around. Players will gravitate towards him. And it should fit in seamlessly, unless there's some personalities from the Leafs players that are younger. Maybe they get their backs up a bit if they feel like Joe Thornton is taking up a lot of air in the room, not from being all about himself, but he's a funny guy. He has personality. People gravitate towards him. I assume that's going to work well in the locker room. I hope it does. It probably will. But there is going to be an adjustment for all that. More than anything, just be a good presence on the power play and don't hurt the team when you're on the ice defensively. That's essentially where we're at with him. Just be a bit better than Spezza was last season.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, it's all a leadership thing to me, and you guys understand it's working in, you know, the chaos that is your two respective markets, how we can play things up too much, and that's the case through first week of training camp into the regular season for Joe Thornton. You know, while he's starting on the top line, who's to say two shifts in, he's back on the third or fourth line. Mm-hmm. You know, my expectations are more from a reality standpoint that I think he's going to be an excellent leader in the locker room. The guys are going to love him, and you're going to get some fantastic content covering this guy. I mean, we saw Carpool Karaoke, his days in Switzerland. I thought that was tremendous, that video that came out in the last couple of weeks. But I'm not, my expectation isn't really there when it comes to offensive output. It's more so what can he do internally to put this team together, to mesh it together stronger. And, you know, maybe it's cliche to talk about that, but I just think come playoff time, this team just, their eyes, collective eyes just don't seem to be on the prize. You know, I just want that compete level, and I'm throwing every cliche out there. I want them to be a bit more polished going into the playoffs than they have in recent years. And I think Thornton will help with that, guys.
Just say, like, the whole story about the postseason and not being able to get over, is that something that follows this team all year, Nick? Is that the overarching storyline of this season for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, as a media member, we do hammer that home a lot. And while the players, you know, in this day and age, I always laugh when players are like, yeah, I don't read, you know, the publications. I was going to say papers. Who reads a paper anymore? But you know, I don't go online to check out websites and Twitter. Like, yeah, right. I think these guys, especially in this market, and that's why I felt John Tavares was the perfect captain for this team. You know, the expectation was there as soon as he was named captain. You got to handle a lot of heat, and I think he's the perfect guy for that type of role. But they read these headlines on a daily basis. They listen to the radio shows. They watch TV, and it's got to be an internal thing. It's, you know, on paper, again, they're really, really strong, and they've got the guys who can make a difference in this league. It's now up to them to go out there and do so. But it's not going to be a walk in the park. Some people expect this division you know, the latter couple teams. I just don't buy that. Like, I love Winnipeg. I like Vancouver. I like Calgary. I think Montreal's gotten better. We'll talk about that over the course of this couple hours. And I think Ottawa's going to be a tougher team. So bottom line, you know, they can have every great player they want on their roster. They better be ready to play every night, guys.
Oh, absolutely. And I do think in the bottom six of the Leafs, the wings have a lot of skill, right? And they have some heaviness. They have a bit of everything. Kerfoot did get exposed at times, right? Yes, especially in the matchup situation. My question will be, between Kerfoot, Spezza, and even Thornton, and we'll see if any young guys emerge as the season goes on, can they get a third line that drives play and does play really well that can win its matchup too? Because if the Leafs get three lines with the defense and goaltending, you're talking about a cup contender there. That's going to be one of the question marks I have about the Leafs. Who emerges as the center that you can really count on in the bottom six?
Yeah, no, and it's funny you say that, because like the headline story the last couple of days has been Alex Kerfoot, who's been banged up, to center line three, the shutdown line. Like, I don't subscribe to these lines in this day and age. You guys know it. Like, coaches change lines every minute, you know, how they feel waking up in the morning. And I think to go off your point, like, a guy to look at is Zach Hyman, who's in a contract year. And funny enough, there's conspiracy theorists in this market that suggest he's playing in the bottom six because Toronto doesn't want to play him with the big boys because they don't want him to want a lot of money in the offseason, which is stupidity. You want your team to succeed. You worry about contracts later. But I think Zach Hyman is a guy, a perfect type of guy you want in a shutdown role, just how heavy he plays given his size and how he hunts the puck. I totally agree with you. Alex Kerfoot, outside of the first 2 weeks of the season, I thought he was great in the first 2 weeks. Most nights you can put his face on an APB in a milk carton because you couldn't find him. And it's sad to say, but it's true. Ilya Mikheyev's another guy, you know, who had a great start, unfortunate laceration injury that kept him out most of the season, comes back in the bubble. wasn't the same player. But I just think in general, it's interesting to say, guys, because there is so much firepower in the top six. I quite frankly think if their depth guys can be better than they showed in the last couple of years, I think Toronto's going to be tough because it's all about depth in this day and age. While you can have those guys in the top six, if you're scoring, you know, in different levels, as you mentioned, guys driving lines, it's going to be tough from a matchup standpoint too, right?
Of all the markets that somebody would suggest that they're going to do something for the salary cap at the expense of winning, I don't think it would be your market, Nick. I feel like
I
feel like winning might be the number one priority in Toronto. It's our NHL preview show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Just the one final topic as we do our deep dive into the Toronto Maple Leafs, and that is Freddie Anderson. There seems to be, and this is more coming from the outside, not being in that market, but on the outside there seems to be this thought that Freddie Anderson may be on the decline and this guy isn't what he once was. And I know maybe the numbers weren't as good as they have been last year, but that return to play, I know it was only five games, but boy, did he look good in those five games against Columbus. And I still think that we're talking about Freddie Anderson as one of the better goaltenders in the North Division. And I think there's a real possibility that we see a big bounce back in his numbers, especially. And Nick, I know that's something that you look for a lot when you do your deep dives into fantasy, but going into a contract year for Freddie Anderson as well, final year of a contract in Toronto, what does the future hold for their number one goaltender?
Yeah, honestly, I view this as a win-win. I think everything you just mentioned, the player wants to get paid. He wants a handsome contract and maybe his best opportunity to get paid big time in his career. So he's going to go after it. You know, the contract year phenomenon in any sport is so fascinating to me. And there isn't an exact science, but it does show that most players do have their best years and seasons where they're hunting money. And that's why I think it's a good position to have a goalie in like this. You know, even a guy... look at Jacob Markstrom last year as a prime example, what he did with the Vancouver Canucks, taking nothing away from him, but he was amazing last year. Jordan Binnington's another guy to watch for, by the way, in St. Louis, too, and we'll go over my fantasy stuff later on. But I think you just look at, in general, if we think the defense is better in front of him, that should mean that Frederick Anderson's going to be better, right? And I do agree with you, although it was Columbus, right? That's more of a defensive-minded team, John Tortorella. It's not many, you know, not as many guns. But I think my expectation is certainly high, and rightfully so, for Frederick Anderson. I think, you know, what he's shown, and I think you add in the fact, too, this 56-game slate, the baseball-style back-to-backs, the buffer zones and the schedule, they're going to do everything humanly possible to rest Freddie Anderson and not to, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt. But the last couple of years, he really hasn't had the luxury of having a backup, and that will change now with Jack Campbell, even the third string. I feel good enough about Aaron Dell. So I think that's the key. If you keep Freddie Anderson fresh, I think no doubt he's going to have a huge year here.
And also playing a lot better in front of him is going to go a long way too. I mean, the environment in their own end in front of him last year was terrible. Same thing for the Vancouver Canucks and Jacob Markstrom. The reason Markstrom was so good is that his strengths kind of fit in perfectly with how the Canucks played, and his ability to make high degree of difficulty saves is what she's really good at. Worked out for Vancouver with how they played, and you know, he didn't let in many soft goals during the regular season. There's something similar here with Freddie Anderson, that if they tweak their system a bit and go back to being a bit better in their own end and playing like they did the previous years, well, Freddie Anderson at that point is a top echelon goalie. And when I talk to a lot of the goalie guys, and we've been blessed in Vancouver to have a lot of the great goalie guys here that we talk the game about, too, and you know, we have Corey Hirsch calling games at our radio station. I've worked closely with Alex Auld and a number of other guys in our market. And every time I talk about goalies around the league, a lot of the goalie guys love Freddie Anderson. And there's a lot there when he does put it together. I do think the narrative has gone completely the other way on Freddie, and I think the organization made the right choice to keep him and not going to overspend on some other guy that's not as good as Freddie Anderson. Because of the available guys outside of Jacob Markstrom, who just cost way too much, I don't think the Leafs had a better shot at getting a better goalie than keeping Freddie Anderson, especially if he clicks again.
Yeah, I think they realized rather quickly, just to jump in quick, Pat, I think, you know, they realized that rather quickly. You're right with Frederick Anderson. They dangled his name out there for a couple of weeks, and then they're like, okay, well, who are we going to go after? And that was taking nothing away from Braden Holtby, guys like that. I just think Markstrom was the only guy that made sense. And once I think they pretty much got the indication that he'd probably want too much for their liking, they stepped away. I just think at that value, even if it's just 1 year at $5 million, especially with this team, especially with the flat cap, it just made too much sense to bring him back. And again, To go full circle on my point, I just think it was a win-win for both sides. If he plays well, then you investigate further. If he doesn't, you move on to somebody else, right, Pat?
Yep, no doubt about it. Maple Leafs open their season Wednesday night, 7 o'clock Eastern, at home to the Montreal Canadiens, coast to coast on Sportsnet. He's Nick Alberga at Sportsnet 590 in Toronto, Sat Shah at Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. My name is Pat Steinberg here at Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This is the NHL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
A heartbreaking loss to what has been a tremendous campaign for the Vancouver Canucks as the Vegas Golden Knights are moving on to the Western Conference Final for the second time in their three-year history, and a Canuck team that beat the Minnesota Wild in the qualifying round, knocked off the defending Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues in the opening round of the playoffs, and came back from a 3-1 deficit to force Game 7 against one of the top teams in the NHL, falls tonight in Game 7, the final score, 3-0 for the Golden Knights.
Man, the Vancouver Canucks were that close to the Western Conference Final. That's Brendan Batchelor on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, backed by Jacob Markstrom and then Thatcher Demko. Canucks were right there in Game 7 of Round 2 with the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, essentially, once that game entered the third period, it felt like overtime because you knew that next goal was going to win. Exactly what happened, and Vegas does end up eliminating Vancouver in 7 games. Now Markstrom gone, along with a few other Vancouver mainstays, and the expectations are going to be as high as they have been in a long time on the West Coast. As we continue on the NHL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, my name is Pat Steinberg in Calgary. We've got Nick Alberga in Toronto, and Sat Shah is in Vancouver. And Sat, you were right in the middle of it as Canucks mania ramped back up in the summertime. They win 2 playoff rounds. They go to Game 7. Take us back to August in the bubble and that qualifying round win over Minnesota, then a win over St. Louis. Just tell us about being in Vancouver as the Canucks got back to having playoff success.
It was astonishing to see how that team took off. And it's really funny when we look back and view the first game they played against the Minnesota Wild. The Canucks get blank. They lose. And the reaction from most in Vancouver was like, oh my God, they come back after all this time. They almost blew their playoff spot at the end of the season. Now they're down against Minnesota. They might get swept by Minnesota, not even going to make the playoffs. And then they reel off 3 straight wins. They lay it on to the St. Louis Blues. And Thatcher Demko keeps them in the series against the Vegas Golden Knights to go 7 games. It was an exhilarating run because it was completely unexpected for them to go as far as they did and to be as fun as they were. And it created so much hope and belief in their young stars, especially Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. Elias Pettersson really took a step in the playoffs. And maybe it shouldn't be a surprise because of how talented he is and how incredibly smart he is. I refer to Elias Pettersson as a matrix player. And by that, I mean when he's on the ice, everything else around him evolves around him, or he has really good sense of what's going on around him. There are very few guys in sport that when they are on the field of play, they see things differently. They anticipate things differently. They read off players differently. And even when he's not accomplishing anything offensively or even defensively, there is something Elias Pettersson contributes and accomplishes each shift. We saw this in the playoffs, the maturity he played in. And that's how the Canucks played. They had maturity to their style despite having a lot of flaws. They relied on their goaltending. They relied on their high-end talent. But they were very disciplined in how they played. For instance, there were shifts where Elias Pettersson wasn't dominating the play offensively, but he made sure to keep his shifts short, get off the ice quickly. Just certain things that you do to make sure the team game keeps going, that you make sure the lines keep moving the way they need to go at even strength. So many things this team believed and did right under Travis Green that was so impressive. They absolutely maxed out who they were, and that's what made that playoff run something for fans to be proud of. There was nothing you could look at after that playoff run and say, oh, the Canucks left value on the table. They absolutely maxed themselves out. The question heading into this season is, has their ceiling gotten higher than it was last year when they clearly hit it against the Vegas Golden Knights? But guys, Pat, Nick, and I know you guys have seen playoff runs as well, and Nick, hopefully one of these days we'll see the Leafs do a playoff run too. But you know what happens in Canadian markets when a team gets going and how much fun it is to just cover those games. And it was nice for Canucks fans who have had deplorable year after deplorable year since the Sedin era era's playoff runs ended to have that feeling again.
We're deep in on the Vancouver Canucks. This is the NHL preview show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. And a lot transpired in Vancouver over the offseason. And certainly the biggest focus from a national perspective going into free agency was what Vancouver was going to do between the pipes. Jacob Markstrom, pending unrestricted free agent, that negotiation went right into the 11th hour, and eventually Markstrom would decide not to sign back in Vancouver. He signs a six-year pact in Calgary. So the Canucks pivot. They bring in Braden Holtby. We all saw what Thatcher Demko did towards the end of the postseason, and now Demko Holtby is your goaltending tandem in Vancouver coming into the season. So, Sat, take us through all of what has led to this. Markstrom was in the Vezina Trophy conversation last year. It was huge for them in the playoffs before he gets hurt. But then Demko pops onto the scene and busts out his .980 save percentage and almost single-handedly got Vancouver into the Western Conference Final. How did we get to this point with Markstrom no longer in Vancouver?
Probably leaving negotiation, not putting your best foot forward in negotiations until it's pretty much too late. And Pat, we talked about this a lot during the season, right? And when the season ended, you know, I come on your show and we'd be like, okay, so what's Markstrom's situation? And I remember telling you, I'm like, well, the last I heard, at one point, the Canucks were offering like a 2-year deal in that $4.5 million range per season, or $4 million range per season, which looks pretty foolish compared to him getting 6x6, right? So the Canucks were not really putting forward a big contract for him. I had heard, guys, that, hey, if the Canucks give him an offer in the 5-year range, you know, or 4-year range, even at over $5 million per year, there's a good chance that deal gets done. The Canucks never really made that type of offer until the last week. And at that point, Markstrom had already wrapped his head around leaving. And at that point, he was just saying, you know what? They haven't given me the offer I want. I want to be appreciated. I want them to show that they love me. And I haven't felt that love yet. And as soon as he started wrapping his head around going, and as soon as he started hearing that there will be teams giving him money, there are Canadian teams out west that are willing to give you what you're looking for, he decided to just take the money. And at that point, you can't really blame him. And I am kind of surprised that the Canucks pushed that long. Like, I'm all for using time. I'm all for playing hardball to try to get the best contract you can get. But if you overplay your hand at some point, well, you risk that guy just saying, screw it, I'm leaving. And what do a lot of the guys say, the guys who play in the National Hockey League? As soon as you put that thought in your mind that you're going to go elsewhere or you're going to explore other opportunities, it's very hard to come back because you're not going to get the same money in Vancouver as elsewhere. So that's how it came to be to that point. But overall, though, I'm not really keen on giving any goalie a 6-year contract, especially a guy who is over 30 years old. So ultimately, if it would have taken 6x6 to sign Markstrom, I would have, you know, been fine with them not doing it. My walkaway number all along was I'm not paying Markstrom $6 million no matter how many years you want, especially if a goalie's in the league right now. But had these negotiations gone differently, guys, there is a chance that Markstrom would have still been in Vancouver if they would have put a more competitive offer in front of him sooner than they did.
Would we agree? Because you take a look at what Demko has done, and his NHL reps are limited to this point, even with what we saw in the bubble. And when he did have a little bit more time to run with it, his numbers weren't outstanding, but you can't ignore what he did against Vegas. Holtby has been an elite goaltender in this league, but has dropped off, and those numbers have kind of hit the skids in the last couple of years. So would you agree, Nick, from the outside that with Markstrom gone, I'm not saying this tandem can't be good because I think the potential is very much there, but there are certainly more question marks between the pipes going into this season than the last couple of years in Vancouver.
Yeah, there are. But for me, again, it's pretty simple to say, hey, the goalie needs to be better. But I think just from a defensive standpoint, the Canucks need to be better. Like, that was a tough year in general for their goaltending because Markstrom had to stand on his head every night. You know, look at what Demko did against the Vegas Golden Knights. So I think as a team defensively, they need to tighten things up. And again, that's on Travis Green. I love the pickup of Nate Schmidt. I think it's very underrated what they've done here with Travis Hamonic in a top four setting, especially going with a guy like Quinn Hughes, the potential of that pairing. Alex Edler, another season with him. You know, what did they get from a Tyler Myers? Maybe an Ollie Ulevi steps in finally to an NHL role here. You know, there's a couple other guys in terms of depth guys. But I think, you know, I look at more of a team aspect, Sat, as opposed to you know, goaltending. I think no doubt in my mind, maybe they've taken a bit of a step back with bringing in Holtby. But I think the key here is to have both guys push each other in the long run, right?
Well, I think absolutely. Having Thatcher Demko made it easier for them to hold firm on the number that they were willing to offer Jacob Markstrom. And that's the way you should approach things, right? If you have insulation or you feel like you have a backup plan, why go over and beyond to bring somebody back where you have that insulation, right? So I do agree with that. In theory, though, one thing I would have kind of liked to see them explore was if you could have brought Markstrom back at a number that worked, well, then you have a pretty good trade chip in Thatcher Demko, right? And you could have done some creative things here. Instead, you lose a goalie for nothing, and then you go to the other guy. So there was an opportunity here to do something else and more creative. But regardless, I'd like the tandem because I do think Braden Holtby and Ian Clark is going to be a good partnership. And Braden Holtby is still not old enough that he's lost all his athleticism. And being at training camp and watching these scrimmages in person, Holtby looks like he hasn't lost too much athleticism. He looks quick. He still looks like the guy who is capable, if things fall into place, to being a high-end goalie again. So I feel good about the goalie tandem this season. They're not going to be as good as Markstrom was last season. And Pat and Calgary fans, I don't mean this, you know, for you to be worried about Markstrom, but Markstrom's not going to be as good as he was last year. That's how good Markstrom was. He was sensational. He may have had his career season, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be hard to replicate what he did no matter what. But to Nick's point, the defense is unquestionably better. Nate Schmidt is exactly what they needed on the back end. All they had really was Quinn Hughes and to a lesser extent Tyler Myers as fleet puck-moving defensemen. You add Nate Schmidt into that fold, now you have potentially 3D pairs with one guy that can scoot and move and make things happen. And if you have that, and if Ylevi does finally become an everyday NHL player, which he's trending towards, never being the top five pick and having the potential we thought he might have when he was taken ahead of guys like Matthew Tkachuk, but he could be a contributor, especially on your third pair. And if that defense actually is significantly better, to Nick's point, that alleviates so much pressure on your goaltending because the environment Jacob Markstrom played in last year was also one of the worst in the National Hockey League, right? Mm-hmm. So if you don't have your goalie under siege as much and your defense provides more offense and they're not spending as much time in their own zone, then there's a pathway for those goalies to be more than fine.
He's Sachin Vancouver. Nick Alberga is in Toronto. My name is Pat Steinberg here in Calgary. This is the NHL preview show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. In 10 minutes, can the Calgary Flames get over their playoff hump despite not making any of their core forwards expendable this season, this offseason, and can they get past their playoff disappointments of recent years? But right now, we are in deep with the Vancouver Canucks, and there are two players, I think, guys, that nationally, when you think of Vancouver, you think of these two guys going forward. Number one is Quinn Hughes, who ends up as a Calder Trophy finalist, the Calder Trophy runner-up. He's getting Norris Trophy buzz heading into this year, Sat. You saw him firsthand. You saw him play every single game last year. Quinn Hughes took so many massive strides and took even more upon the return to play. What is he capable of in year two as an NHLer?
He is completely capable of being in the Norris discussion all season. Whether he wins it or not, I mean, hey, we'll see how the season goes. But Quinn Hughes is already one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League. There isn't a player in the league that skates as well as Quinn Hughes does. There are guys who are faster than Quinn Hughes, case in point, Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon. But nobody skates the way Quinn does and is as elusive and as good on his edges as he is. He's a unicorn as far as defensemen go with his style of play. Cale Makar is very similar, but he's power, right? He scores goals too. It's a bit different. Quinn's creativity with the puck and how he sees the game and the level of confidence he plays with, the subtlety to his greatness is astonishing when you watch him in person. We have normalized Quinn Hughes in Vancouver at this point because he does incredible things holding the line and he dances around guys and we barely bat an eye at this point when we've seen him do them because he does it on a regular basis. It's gotten to the point where he does things now. We're like, oh yeah, Quinn doing Quinn things. And somebody who doesn't watch him every day sees it. They're like, how did he just do that? How are you guys watching this every day now losing your minds? It's like, well, when you see it on a consistent basis, it becomes normalized. Quinn has a potential here. He already is the most talented defenseman the Canucks have ever had. There's no doubt about it. And they've never drafted a defenseman as talented as Quinn Hughes. And the future of this organization in many ways hinges on him and Elias Pettersson. But if Quinn takes that second-year leap, players like him oftentimes do that are next-level talents, it has such a big boost on your back end. And we saw a guy like Miro Heiskanen, right? Like in, you know, his second season, as he got better, he becomes dominant when he's on the ice, right? And it's in his own zone as well. I see Quinn Hughes having the potential to having a dominant season already as a sophomore.
I can't say enough how much I'm looking forward to Luke Hughes, the third Hughes brother to come in the NHL and potentially the 2021 NHL draft. But, you know, I've been watching Luke Hughes, or Quinn Hughes, for a long period of time. I know his trainer here in where I grew up in Oakville, Ontario, him and Jack. I saw them skate quite a bit even before they were in the NHL. And Deej, you know, his trainer over there kept telling me, watch out for Quinn, watch out for Quinn. I've never seen somebody skate like this. And then the translation's just been seamless to the NHL. I don't think we put enough stock as media members in general, how much pressure, you know, how much talent goes into being a young defenseman in this league and just the way the game is played now. And, you know, that's why I think it was even more shattering to me to see what Cale Makar did last year, to see what Quinn Hughes did for the Vancouver Canucks. And I just feel like the sky's the limit. I honestly feel like he's scratching the surface. You know, some of the plays he made in the bubble were just tremendous. For his age, you have to go do a double check on HockeyDB.com. Like, he has every tool possible to make him an elite defenseman, already is, but to be a guy year in, year out, that you're throwing in the conversation with Roman Josi, throwing in the conversation with, you know, Victor Hedman, a guy who's going to be in the Norris conversation for many years to come, and just an unreal pick by the Vancouver Canucks. I love Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, it's an absolute joy to watch him play. And you know, I did this. We've been doing these things out here, stacking up the North Division, and I had Vancouver as my number one blue line. I took some heat for it, but when you've got a guy like Quinn Hughes and you add a Nate Schmidt and soon you add a Travis Hamonic officially, and on top of having Edler still being solid, I think Vancouver's blue line stacks up really well against the rest of the North Division, and Quinn Hughes is the number one reason I'd rank them number one. And then, speaking of number one, funny, Elliot Friedman in 31 Thoughts today, which is out at sportsnet.ca, had a little blurb about Elias Pettersson being plus 2,000 to win the Hart Trophy this year. And his last sentence is, he's going to win one sooner rather than later. Here's my question, because the points are coming, the progression is coming. We've already seen Pettersson win a Calder Trophy, Sat, but is he a number one center? If you were to compare it to the rest of the NHL or even inside this North Division, is he a bona fide number one NHL center right now? And if not, how close until he is?
I'll take it a step farther and say he's a bona fide franchise centerman for this team. Like, that is the leap he has taken. And you can, you know, not you, but people can point to the fact that JT Miller takes the faceoffs a lot, but it's because JT Miller is incredible at taking faceoffs. That's the only center responsibility JT Miller has on that line. Elias Pettersson's two-way play already is incredible for a guy his age. When you look at the defensive metrics, he was one of the elite two-way guys in a league. And I know some of the, you know, wins above replacement for hockey and goals above replacement, all these sort of things, it's a bit of a murkier, harder stat to quantify in hockey and put a lot of weight into it. But looking at some of the metrics in terms of value analytically, he ranked amongst the top in the league already this past season. This is in his second season. And Elias Pettersson is the type of player that continually is going to get better. Kind of like Quinn Hughes. And to the point that Nick made, when you are that next level player, and when you are the type of guy that's, you know, franchise level and is that dedicated, the amount of work they put in to be great, it goes beyond anything a normal player does. And Pettersson is one of those guys that's wired that way. His incremental improvements year to year is going to be noticeable, and there's already this maturity to his game. And as I was mentioning a bit earlier, in the playoffs, yeah, the defensive game was great. It was also awesome seeing on the power play and scoring offensively. But just subtle, small, mature things he did on the ice to make sure he's in the right position, make sure that he doesn't cheat, make sure that he covers for a teammate, make sure that he's on top of things to get off the ice and not be on the ice a bit too long when he's tired. Like, there is this way he thinks the game, and that's why you saw Wayne Gretzky in his rookie season mention how he reminds him of himself because of the way he thinks the game, going back to him being that matrix type of player that when he's on the ice, he fully understands where everybody is and what to do in every single situation. I see him taking even another step, and I'm all the way in with Elliot Friedman. This kid is going to win a Hart Trophy sooner rather than later.
Yeah, same for me. You know, to answer your question, Pat, unequivocally, I think you even just look at the progression of Elias Pettersson to end the season at the shutdown in March to how he did in the bubble. I think he added another layer to his game, guys. And Sat, you know this better than anybody in this conversation. Just what Elias Pettersson, you know, the style, the brand he played with. Everybody knows come playoff time, you got to elevate your play and play a bit heavier and nastier. And I saw every box checked from Elias Pettersson, you know, from providing offense to getting in there physically. I think guys like that have to lead by example to really prove their worth from a leadership standpoint. And I think you look at his age and you look at his trajectory, I think it's hard to argue, you know, against the contrary right now, because this guy's one of the best players in this league, period, right now, in my opinion. And I can't wait to see what he does on this team and you know, going forward with the Vancouver Canucks and in general with his potential line mates, you know, guys like JT Miller. It seems like anybody Elias Pettersson plays with, he makes them exponentially better. And that's what I'm looking forward to seeing the most out of this team.
One thing that and that continues to amaze me about Elias Pettersson is how he does not suffer bad questions. And I still remember I had the privilege of covering the NHL Awards in Vegas the last time we had an NHL Awards. And Pettersson won the Calder Trophy, and the Canucks PR team had set up a one-on-one interview that I could feed back to the guys at 6:50. And I was—I don't think I've ever been more nervous for an interview, because I did not want Pettersson to give me that look and shut down my question. And I was able to—I was able to get through it without that happening. The kid's an absolute stud. And am I, like, are people in love? Am I in love with Vancouver's forward depth? No, maybe not. Mm-hmm. But that top six sat, and with Pettersson as that number one center and that bona fide elite number one center as he continues to progress, it's tough not to like what Vancouver can throw out with their top six forwards right now.
Yeah, I'm a lot higher on Vancouver than a lot of the general public is on the outside looking at this team, for all the reasons you guys mentioned. The defense is improved. Goaltending, we'll see, but there's potential there for it to be above average. And the high end of Vancouver's forward group is good enough to hang with anybody's high end, at least for now. And it's going to also depend on Nils Höglander, who is potentially the next rookie in line to make waves in Vancouver. I would caution and say, be patient with this kid, and let's not expect him to all of a sudden come in and do what we saw Pettersson do, Quinn Hughes do, Brock Besser do. I mean, those guys are not the norm. They are the exception. And it seemed like year after year, one guy, you know, tops the other guy. I'm not expecting Nils Höglander to do that. And I think Nils Höglander, if anything, has only earned a live NHL regular season audition. And how he plays the next handful of games will determine whether he stays here or not. That's going to really determine if he can hit how much better the top six is. The overarching question for this team remains the bottom six. Kind of similar to Toronto, how we're like, okay, so who's going to be the shutdown line? But Toronto has so much more in their bottom six. There is a higher likelihood that Toronto figures out their bottom six situation than Vancouver does. There's more high-end talent in Toronto's bottom six. But if Vancouver can get a third line to emerge, then all of a sudden they could compete for the top spot in the division. As it stands, I think they're a playoff team. I like a lot about their team, but if you really want to, say, compete for the division, that bottom six is what could keep them or catapult them to doing so.
Vancouver Canucks open their regular season coming up tomorrow, 10 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Mountain, and 7 o'clock Pacific. Vancouver Canucks, Edmonton Oilers across the Sportsnet television network, and of course on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. He is Sat Shaw in Vancouver. Nick Alberga is in Toronto. My name is Pat Steinberg in Calgary, and this is the NHL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Kiviranta and up the right wing side with a shot, stop, rebound. Back in front, Gurianov shoots and scores. Denis Gurianov scores his fourth goal of Game 6. The Stars, their seventh straight, and they lead the Flames 7-3.
Yep, that was a kick in the gut for everyone in Calgary. Seven consecutive goals after taking a 3-0 lead in Game 6 of their first-round series with the Dallas Stars. A six-game exit, and a ton of questions this offseason surrounding the Calgary Flames. That's Derek Wills on Sportsnet 960 in Calgary for a third straight playoff appearance. Calgary's top players, led by Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, Mark Giordano, failed to rise to the occasion and raise their game when things mattered the most. The big buzz in this market was about whether the Flames would move out one of their top forwards during this offseason, but 2 days before they open their season, top forwards remain unchanged from what we saw in their first-round series against the Stars. My name is Pat Steinberg in Calgary. Sat Shaw is in Vancouver. Nick Alberga in Toronto. This is the NHL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network as we dive in on the Calgary Flames, who did not make any changes in their core group of forwards specifically. Guys, Monahan and Gaudreau were the two that I think nationally everybody was talking about, and certainly in this market, everybody had their eye on whether or not one or both of those guys would be back with the Flames for this season. Well, they're both here. They're both skating on the same line together. Once again, they remain attached at the hip, but Nick, they make the right call. Is keeping Gaudreau and keeping Monahan in Flames jerseys the right move for this team going into this year?
Well, firstly, can you confirm or deny that they'll be playing at Rogers Arena this season, the Calgary Flames, the Calgary Canucks?
I believe they'll make a few trips there anyway.
Yeah, you're right. There's been a lot of additions to this team. We'll go over them momentarily, and there's a lot of former Canucks on this roster. But I think that was my expectation, too. And granted, Pat, you would know this. I mean, Sean Monahan pretty much hasn't been healthy for like 2.5 years, and I think when these they're going their best, Gaudreau and Monahan are tough to stop, and some of the better players and one of the best combos for my money in this league. So ultimately, I think it comes down to this season. I don't think it was a great trade landscape either, specifically because of the pandemic and everything that goes around with that. Also, the flat cap. So I think they'll revisit this down the road if it doesn't work. I like the depth of this organization. I think the big glaring need was, you know, a premier goalie. They got that in Jacob Markstrom, but I think you look specifically at Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau. Bottom line, that line in general, I don't care who's on the wing, if it's Dominic Simone or Dylan Dubé or, you know, Elias Lindholm goes back with that trio, they need to be better, right? And they need to lead the way, because I thought last season the Tkachuk line was pretty much the top line, and the Gaudreau line just left me leaving, you know, wanting more. And that's, it's tough to say that when you're paying those guys a good chunk of coins. So certainly, from a scoring standpoint, I think I'm looking forward to seeing what Gaudreau and Monahan can bring to the table this time around.
You're absolutely right, Nick, to point out the stars, right? I mean, that's what it's going to hinge on. And yeah, Markstrom is going to give you a higher baseline and goal. If Tanev stays healthy, gives you, you know, a steady presence on the back end, and you have a pretty good defense overall, the Flames are going to go as far as Johnny Gaudreau and Monahan will take him essentially up front. Like, we know what Matthew Tkachuk is going to bring. If Gaudreau gets back to being the player he was a few years ago and Monahan, you know, regains his goal-scoring touch and is a bit better defensively, this team could be extremely tough. I mean, I'd say no team is more boom or bust than the Calgary Flames this season in this division. Like, if things click, they could be the best team in the division. But if things don't gel and those guys like Gaudreau and Monahan don't figure it out, it could be a long season as well.
And Pat, I just think, you know, to answer your question, I do think, guys, it was the right call. I just think in this setting, it was just going to be tough to make a trade like that. I think ultimately you're looking at Johnny Gaudreau, and ultimately you're looking at a trade in the Eastern Conference. Philadelphia, Columbus, New Jersey, all those teams are going to be involved. Buffalo. I just don't know if there was a match out there. So I think, you know, you always have to look at this from this point of view. You know, ultimately, we're talking about it already with Pierre-Luc Dubois in Columbus, Patrick Laine with Winnipeg. You have to try to extract the most value possible from a player. So they're banking on Johnny Gaudreau to come out there this season and rip it up. And next thing you know, his value is through the roof, and it's a different outlook come next offseason. So to answer your question, I think they made the right call in not making a major trade.
You know what? And I think you're bang on that, because I think what we have seen in the last couple of years is that maybe the shift as to who the most important forwards are on this team has begun, and maybe that has put the spotlight on Matthew Tkachuk and Elias Lindholm, but that doesn't mean that you're just ready to boot Johnny Gaudreau or Sean Monahan out the door and we don't need them here anymore. If there's a trade that would have made sense and could have addressed other needs and you got fair return on, sure, but I'm with you. I don't think that market existed in this bizarre offseason, so if the market isn't going to exist, you're not just trading them for the sake of trading them. And that's exactly the approach I think the Flames undertook. And I think the refocus or the reshaping of the way that they look at their forward groups is designed to take the pressure off those two guys, Sat, and not kind of jam them into being first line players in all situations. I think they are trying to rethink their forward groups. They've moved Elias Lindholm to center. They've kind of gone for a more balanced approach so that you don't necessarily, as an opposing team, like, I'll give you an example. Dallas put the line of Cogliano and Como and that trio out against the Monahan line basically the entire series in the bubble. And as long as that line didn't score at even strength, which they didn't, the Stars won that matchup and won that matchup significantly. And it allowed the Ben line to have more favorable matchups, so on and so forth. And that's something the Flames are trying to get away from. Don't make that line the one line that you need to shut down and come up with some different pairings. And I think the big focus this season is going to be about taking some of the overall pressure off those two guys and just allow them to do what they do best, and that is produce offensively.
You're absolutely right. Put them in positions where they can just do what they do best, right? Like, don't put them in spots where they get exposed defensively or get asked to do the heavy lifting in the matchup role, which they're not suited to do. And the team, the way it's stacked up, makes sense for that. And you're right about not going out and making this trade. And this is, you know, sidebar take on the National Hockey League in general. In no league do we hear as many rumors about star players that never get traded. I mean, that's the National Hockey League, right? And every single week there's a new guy that comes up. Now it's Pierre-Luc Dubois, although it seems like at some point he does get moved. But all we hear is like, this guy might get moved, that guy might get moved. Here's a star player on the block. So many guys that might get traded. None of them get traded, right? And ultimately, right now, that value wasn't going to be there based on the season Goudreau had for you to even make that type of deal. Anyways, teams were offering probably 75 cents on a dollar at best for what he is worth potential-wise. But having a guy like Josh Levo come in, I do like that addition. Now, if Josh Levo is healthy, guys, he can be that middle six player that's really good defensively, that moves up and down your lineup. And in theory, playing with a guy like Michael Backlund, that line could hold its own defensively. You have options with that forward group for Calgary to have a shutdown line, and maybe Josh Levo was part of it, which could make him one of the more underrated acquisitions the Flames had this offseason.
Yeah, I'm very curious in general when it comes to Jeff Ward now, a full season, to go from training camp, everything that transpired. I thought he did a tremendous job, by the way, last year, given everything around Bill Peters, and to come in the way he did and put Calgary on the right track once again, I thought was brilliant. I think you guys are right from a depth standpoint. They want to take some of the pressure away from Goodrow and Monahan. That's why we're even seeing a Michael Backlund maybe in a third line role this season. Although, again, we talked about it throughout this show, how lines can change so quickly. I think a very underrated player in this league, not only on Calgary, is Andrew Mangiapane. Played in that second line last year. I just think he's a guy who can play in your top six. He's very, very versatile. Not to mention, we haven't even mentioned the name Matthew Tkachuk yet. I think clearly he's vital to the success of this team, but I think that's the biggest key is the depth scoring. Because I really feel like this team was almost a one-line team last year, and that's been the story in Calgary for multiple years. I think on paper it looks great with Goodrow and Monahan as a combo, and then in the second line with Tkachuk and Lindholm, then you got guys like Backlund and Mangiapane and even a Sam Bennett to filter in. So I think that's probably one thing of many I'm looking from Calgary this season. From a depth scoring standpoint, can they finally get it, Pat?
Nick Alberga at Sportsnet 590 in Toronto. Sat Shah, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. My name is Pat Steinberg here at Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. Now, they didn't make those changes. The Flames didn't move out any of their core forwards or really make any of those type of moves, but doesn't mean that they didn't undergo some significant transition. In comes Jacob Markstrom, who is the biggest goaltending addition they've made in more than a decade. He signed 6x6. TJ Brody leaves for Toronto. Chris Tanev comes in from Vancouver, 4x4.5. And Cam Talbot is no longer a member of the team. He signs in Minnesota. Just overall, like from the outside, Nick, and from a few thousand kilometers away, what do we make of Calgary's kind of low-key reshaping of their group here?
Yeah, I like what they've done, and I think we forget some pieces as well. Like even a subtle pickup, Nikita Nesterov coming back from the Continental Hockey League, right? Played with Tampa back in the day. Yusuf Välimäki, getting him healthy. I think he has an impact. Rasmus Anderson, can he take another step? I love the insulation of a Chris Tanev. You know, the guy's big on the PK and defensive-type minutes. That's going to be huge. It seems like Noah Hanifin's name's been on the trade market for years now, and he's only been in the league a couple years. And Mark Giordano, the captain, as we talked about, isn't getting any younger. I like the pickups this team has made, and I always viewed Calgary as a bounce-back team, even, you know, considering what they did last year. It was disappointing the way their bubble time ended, clearly. But I felt for a while now that Calgary has the right composition on paper to be a successful team, not to mention, I think maybe you guys would disagree, they have their first bona fide starting netminder since Mika Kiprusoff. Like, it's been that long. And that's taking nothing away from David Riddick. Like, I did my rankings and my fantasy hockey stuff for this division in terms of tandems, and I like a tandem pairing quite a bit of Jacob Markstrom and David Riddick. For Riddick to settle in, knowing he's the backup goalie and can settle in and get his starts when need be, I think is going to produce big-time value. So no doubt Calgary's one of the teams to beat, for me at least, in the North Division this season.
They are. I mean, it's the North Division. There's going to be a team that's going to stub its toe, right? I mean, just look at it. We have Vancouver, we have Toronto, we have Calgary, we have Edmonton, we have Montreal. I mean, these five teams, not to mention Winnipeg, who they could surprise, right? I mean, at least those five teams look like you can make a real argument that they should surefire be a top four team. So somebody's going to fall out. My only question with Calgary, and goaltending-wise, Riddick is actually really good backup at this point, and having him here gives you insulation that even if Markstrom has a bit of a iffy start, you have someone you can go to that can give you at least a baseline. My question with Markstrom, though, is how long will it take him to be at his best under Calgary's system, working with the goalie coach, and how that transition goes? It's really hard for goalies, even great ones, to get parachuted to new teams and be good right away. I mean, I don't think it's going to be like Bobrovsky. That's next level bad, and hopefully that's not what we see here in Calgary. But there could be an adjustment period, and there often is with goalies and new goalie coaches in circumstances like this. So that's my only question with Calgary, is that could it take a bit longer than hoped for Jacob Markstrom to be at his best, and how much does that impact where they end up in the standings?
Flesh out something you said a little earlier when we were talking about Vancouver, Sat. You said, hey, nobody is going to be as good as Jacob Markstrom was in Vancouver last year, so the tandem of Demko and Holtby isn't going to be as what they got from Markstrom. And I got news for you, Flames fans. Markstrom's not going to be that good. Flesh that out a little bit as to just how good Markstrom was with the Canucks last year.
Jacob Markstrom last year, when you look at analytical value, and Clear Sight's analytic does a fantastic job looking at goaltenders. It's Steven Valiquette, who used to be a former National Hockey League goaltender himself, and they don't just look at, hey, the shot charts, Corsi, high danger, medium danger, this sort of stuff, dangerous passes, and those, you know, metrics have value and all this sort of stuff. CSA takes into account hundreds of variables when it comes to goaltending, and they really look at environment and you know what's happening. And by those metrics, Jacob Markstrom had an incredible season. He was worth, in the 69 games the Canucks played this past year, something like 6 or 7 wins, which is astronomical for any goaltender, let alone, you know, in that type of environment. Every player has a career season. And every player has a season they can never best. We may have seen Jacob Markstrom's career season. Now, that doesn't mean that he might not be 90% of what he was. And if he's worth 5 wins and, you know, projected over, say, 70 games, that's still massive. That means he might be worth 3 to 4 wins in a 56-game season, which, again, would be huge. That's how good, if he can be that good. But it's really hard for a goalie like him to play in that type of environment and be even better than he was this past season. So it's going to be even harder for Jacob Markstrom to best what he did this past year.
And to piggyback off your point, you know, I think we can all agree he's going to a better defensive team, right? And how does that impact the value of Jacob Markstrom? Because I think you're right. It's just going to be, you know, I feel the same way about Connor Hellebuyck with Winnipeg. There's just no way you could replicate that type of season considering how much rubber he faced. It's just not realistic. But I think when it comes to Markstrom, I've been having a more difficult time trying to quantify, you know, my expectations, you know, for Markstrom, for the Calgary Flames. I just think, at least on paper, I think Calgary's maybe a bit better defensively than the Vancouver Canucks were. I mean, the numbers are pretty similar last season, but I'm just more curious to see how Markstrom reacts to being, again, and this is on paper, at least in my opinion, a better team. But I think the insulation is key. It's clearly the most volatile position in hockey, guys. We know this. Mm-hmm. Markstrom has been dinged up in the past. Every goalie has. And I think Riddick's going to be bigger than we think this season for Calgary.
I totally agree with the Riddick part. Having, like, one of the things, I guess, you know, people always say Vancouver has the best tandem on paper. There is potential that Calgary has the best tandem.
Yep.
I absolutely think that could be the case, especially if Markstrom can hit the ground running. And I think Riddick is a guy that breaks down with a little bit, or at least in the last couple of years has broken down a little bit with a little bit too much of a workload. If you can give him a 1B workload, I think he can be a real solid tandem mate to a very good, and Nick, you said it, the best goaltender they've had since Mika Kiprusoff here in Calgary. I don't think that's a stretch at all when you're talking about Markstrom. I think that's straight up fact. I think this goaltending tandem could be really good in Calgary this year as we continue on the NHL preview show. Nick Elberg, Sat Shaw, Pat Steinberg on the Sportsnet Radio Network in 10 minutes. Who did you take number one overall in your fantasy draft? Did you make the right call? We'll dive into fantasy hockey in a few minutes, but Mark Giordano turned 37 in October, guys, and the Flames captain certainly struggled by his standards in the bubble, and the postseason has always been a bit of an issue for Mark Giordano, but there has started to be some question marks in this market about whether or not the decline has started for the seemingly ageless captain of the teams. Are you ready to buy into Giordano maybe being on the way down, Nick? Has that started for you?
Hashtag load management. In a nutshell, I don't think just yet. Like that, I think they just have to be more careful with their utilization of a dude who's 37. Like, I totally get it. There are a couple freaks in this league, namely Zdeno Chara, but I mean, he even isn't the same player that he was when he was 37, clearly. I think that's why we're seeing Rasmus Anderson in the first power play unit. I just think they can do a better job of insulating Mark Giordano, and I think everything we mentioned earlier on about a Chris Tanev stepping into this lineup, even a Rasmus Anderson, a Valimaki, I think is going to play a bigger role than the expectation is out there right now, provided he can stay healthy and get back to full speed. And Noah Hanifin, I do truly feel like Calgary has the depth to insulate Mark Giordano, and I think that's the biggest key for me. And Sat, you can piggyback. I think the biggest key is to, you know, get the minutes right on Mark Giordano and make sure you're not overplaying the guy, because he's played a lot of hockey over the last couple of years.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, that was a pretty big fall for Giordano, from being the Norris Trophy winner to what he was this past year. It's such a weird circumstance, right? Playing in the bubble too and everything that went into it, that I am not willing yet to say that Giordano is over the hill and he's done. But I do think the expectation shouldn't be that he is the top pairing defenseman anymore. He might just be a really, really good number three at this point, or a really, really good, you know, second pairing defenseman. And I think Nick is absolutely right. If you start playing Giordano like he's the Giordano of old, and he's playing 23, 24, 25 minutes a night, I think you're asking for trouble in this condensed schedule. But if he plays 75, 80% of what he was as a Norris winner a couple of years ago, and you limit his minutes, and you have Rasmus Anderson step up, I do kind of look at the insulation being there, to Nick's point, and I do think Giordano can have a bit of a bounce back season.
Last thing I wonder about, and this is certainly a huge topic here in Calgary, I wonder if this is the last run for this group. Like, they didn't make any changes this offseason, and Nick, to your point, it was not a great trade market to do it in, and so here they come. Well, they've made some significant changes, but the core group, for the most part, is pretty identical to what we've gotten used to. And I just wonder, Sat, if they don't have playoff success, if we're talking about a non-playoff year or another first-round exit, I wonder if that's when the trigger gets pulled on some of these moves that they've been discussing, some of these things that have been out there for a little while now. Because how long can you go forward with having the same core group if that success doesn't eventually come?
Right, and I do think that that's going to blow up a lot of different things. Would you guys agree, Pat, I'll throw this to you, and Nick, get in on this as well, that Brad Trey Living is a do-or-die season for him? I know he's got, you know, an extension and everything, but considering all the ammunition he's had, all he's spent, and the trades that he's made, if this blows up in their face, not only are you rebuilding the roster to some degree, you're probably looking for a new direction in the front office.
I think it all of a sudden becomes wide open for discussion, Nick, in that respect, because yep. He's had a number of coaches go through here, not always because there's one that was out of his control, but I mean, the amount of head coaches, the playoff success hasn't been there since his very first year when he took over. Yeah, I think that door is wide open. If this is a disappointing year, I think those conversations intensify. Absolutely, I do.
Yeah, 1,000%. I totally agree with both of you. I still truly feel like Treliving has maybe one more card to play, and that's making a major trade, going to ownership and saying, hey, I think this team can be better if we make a major trade. Maybe I'm in the minority. I do think Johnny Gaudreau's days are numbered in Calgary. I don't know if it's going to happen during this season, but I think ultimately in the long run, I don't know if he's going to be a Calgary Flame long term. And again, we talked about it earlier. It's all about finding value. It's all about Getting the player to play the way he has in the past, and that'll make the trade even more valuable when it does come to fruition, because I think it's clear that Calgary, you know, has some needs and some thoughts elsewhere in this lineup. So I think it would help, obviously, and benefit everybody if Gaudreau has that type of season we're expecting. But I still feel like that's maybe the last card to be played here by Tre Living, is making a major change in the top six.
Flames open their 56-game schedule on Thursday. They're on the road in Winnipeg, 8 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Mountain for Game 1 for the Calgary Flames. My name is Pat Steinberg here at Sportsnet 960 in Calgary, Sat Shah at Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, and we got Nick Alberga at Sportsnet 590 in Toronto. You're locked on the NHL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. So most fantasy drafts are done, and that's okay. Let's still set you up for the fantasy hockey season as we continue along on our NHL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Pat Steinberg in Calgary. Sat Shah's in Vancouver, and our fantasy hockey expert is Nick Alberga, who is hanging out at Sportsnet 590 in Toronto. Sportsnet.ca, your place for everything fantasy. Just go search Nick Alberga on Google. It'll pop up his Sportsnet.ca page, and you can see all of the preview work done coming up for the season, and certainly as the season goes along, tons of fantasy analysis as we move through a season that starts tomorrow. So much talk about this year, 56 games, new divisions. What does it all mean, and how does it affect fantasy hockey? And it all comes down to, this is going to be the most unprecedented and most bizarre season we've ever had in the NHL, and certainly that applies, Nick, to fantasy hockey as well. Just take us through what you have put out so far and all that you've dove into when it comes to getting set for the season.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, and my Sportsnet Fantasy Hockey Draft Kit is available right now at sportsnet.ca, and I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, it really is such an unusual, strange, odd season in fantasy hockey from that respect. The 56-game schedule, the baseball-style back-to-backs, the buffer zones in the schedule, not to mention COVID. There's going to be, you know, cases. How does that impact your fantasy roster, your IR slots? Like, there's just so many moving factors to this fantasy season. Doing my drafts, it's just been quite evident. The need for goaltending for fantasy owners, people are jumping quickly on netminders. Something, you know, we saw happening and coming from a mile away. Not to mention, I think in general in goaltending in this league, guys, I mean, you could probably list on 7, 8, 9 bona fide number one goalies remaining in this league. It's going to a tandem share, timeshare type heavy league, especially in this day and age of analytics. And that's why I think there's going to be more even increased weight on backups throughout the league, right? I mean, if you're in a fantasy league and you want to hit a waiver stream of, say, you know, David Rittich, who we talked about last segment, I think there's a lot of value in that. I think it's taking advantage of opponents, you know, when teams are playing Chicago, when teams are playing Detroit, to a lesser extent, because I think Ottawa's going to be better than we lead on, taking advantage of matchups. So I think more times than not, I already endorsed the fact that fantasy owners have to be on top of everything. I think it's going to be even more difficult, Sat, this time around because of all the elements that we're living in here in 2021.
Well, absolutely. And that's the thing that makes the fantasy aspect such a difficult one this season too, right? Like, generally speaking, I love taking bets on young players. I love taking bets on guys that could emerge and take that next step. And it's going to be interesting, Nick, in my submission, I want to get your opinion on this, that do we go after players in a season like this that are more established just out of safety because we know these are the guys coaches will lean on? And we've seen in past years that in situations like this, when there's, you know, a lot of games in a short period of time and it's condensed and the pressure is higher, coaches do defer to their veterans and they really lean on those guys. So how many bets would you look to make here long shot wise in fantasy?
Yeah, you're right, honestly, because that's been one of the things. There's always that sex appeal, if you, you know, for lack of a better term, when it comes to the rooks, right? And the fact is there's no preseason games, you know, a limited training camp. Coaches are not really getting that look, you know, and that's why we will see maybe in the first couple of weeks. But naturally, coming off the World Junior, Timothy Stützle comes to mind with the Ottawa Senators. Hasn't even played a preseason game. We think he's going to make his NHL debut right off the bat. Trevor Zegras comes to mind with the Anaheim Ducks. And I think ultimately you look at some of the other rookies. I mean, the goaltending is going to be a fascination for me to watch. You know, still classified as a rookie, Igor Shesterkin with the New York Rangers. You know, Ilya Sorokin coming in from the KHL to the New York Islanders. From that point of view, it's just going to be interesting to see how it unfolds. But I think you make an excellent point. More times than not, Coaches have a pretty decent understanding of what to expect from a player, right? You have your rookie camps in the off season, you have your preseason games, you have your practices. It's easier to make an analysis, and that's why I think there'll be a quick trigger finger this year for coaches, because they don't know what to expect. They have no expectations for players. I think the moment they make a mistake, down the lineup they go, because I think it's being understated, Pat. Just, you know, the importance of every game. How often do we talk about it in the hockey world when you play a team in your division as opposed to out of your division, right? It's like night and day. You lose the point, whatever. But the points are even that much more important. And I think to Sat's point, Pat, I think teams are going to, you know, every game is going to be vital for them, and they're going to play their vets way more than we think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you have a great piece up on kind of attacking the North Division specifically. In fantasy this year, and how to go about, whether it be in season or going into a draft, if you still have one to do prior to the start of the season. Where, so like right now, you take a look at the top group. I mean, and Nick, your top 250, you've got Connor McDavid ranked number one. It's tough to argue with that. And then you've got that top group. You've got McDavid. Kucherov would be in there if he wasn't hurt, and we knew he was playing this year. He's not going to play. But it's MacKinnon, it's McDavid, it's Draisaitl, it's probably Panarin. That's probably like your top elite fantasy group as it stands right now. Am I missing anybody from that elite group as that top tier of guys?
Well, two guys I'd throw into the conversation, maybe a couple others as well. People seem to be skittish on the Boston Bruins. I have no clue why. David Pastrnak is an elite fantasy producer. I understand he's going to miss some time to start this season, but I think you can't pass up on him. Even a guy like Brad Marchand, I think, is an elite fantasy contributor in my top 10. I'm expecting a good season from Jack Eichel. I think his attachment to Taylor Hall is going to be huge, and vice versa. Wouldn't be shocked if Eichel's in some sort of heart conversation at some point in time in the season. Then you look at goal scoring, right? I just think that's so key from a fantasy point of view. Alex Ovechkin, there is no one better. 706 career NHL goals. You know, wins the Rocket Richard coming off a ninth career in duel with David Pastrnak. You know, clearly I'm looking at a guy like Austin Matthews to maybe take that next step. And more so from an Art Ross standpoint, you know, the points tally. And I think the fact that he's going to have full-time attachment, it seems, at least here to start this season, to Mitch Marner, known for his point production, I think is going to be massive in terms of a point outlook if you're in a points-only league from Austin Matthews' point of view. And then you just can't sleep on guys who have been there for so long, right? Like Sidney Crosby, you know, Patrick Kane. I think Mark Scheifele is a guy who is never given the respect he deserves in fantasy hockey. I think could be a monumental piece. And then I can wrap up this portion of the conversation with how big and crucial goaltending is. It's leaps and bounds. It's Andrei Vasilevsky, guys, and everybody else when it comes to fantasy hockey this season.
Well, the goaltending is interesting because sometimes, you know, and this is funny for my league, we have a keeper league I've been a part of for over a decade, and every year we overthink the goalies, and then we're like, well, actually, when you look at the goalie scoring, you shouldn't over worry about it too much. But I think this year, though, it's interesting because the margins are so much finer. You're not going to have guys put up over 100 points, right? That you're going to have, you know, the points be pretty close. So those margins and goals can be really interesting. And I look at a guy like Shesterkin, who obviously is super talented, and, you know, he's going to get the run. I look at a guy like Samsonov, though. Now, here's the thing. The Washington Capitals quietly, in my estimation, became one of the most improved teams this offseason with some of the additions that they made. Small little things here and there, but it shored up a lot of issues. And if Ilya Samsonov actually hits, could we be talking about him as one of the fantasy leaders goalie-wise this season?
Sad. It sounds like you have Ilya Samsonov on your roster. You don't have to admit
I
that.
I drafted him. I did draft him.
There you
probably
go.
My second pick, yeah.
No, I get it. You know, the cool thing for me, guys, you know, again, there's just so many factors in fantasy hockey this year, is the strictly, you know, divisional play, right? And I think ultimately, when I'm going to draft goaltenders, I look at who they're playing. And again, this just leads and contributes to my Vasilevsky conversation, how I took him as high as 10, number 10 overall in my draft, because look at some of the teams he's playing. Like Detroit, they're going to destroy them. Chicago, they're going to destroy them. The Panthers are one of the worst defensive teams in hockey. Nothing leads me to believe that it's going to be, you know, on the contrary this season. A lot of question marks are the Dallas Stars, from Ben Bishop to Tyler Seguin. I like to take my chances, you know, from Tampa winning a lot of games. To answer your question about that division in general, you know, for soccer enthusiasts out there, it's the group of death. Like, you can make a legitimate case outside of New Jersey for 7 of the 8 teams in that division, not only to, you know, make the playoffs, but to potentially win the division. And that's where I wonder is, because I totally agree with you. I like the Capitals. I like the additions they've made. I do think there's a bit, we have to temper expectation a bit with Ilya Samsonov. You know, 26 games, excuse me, of NHL experience, you know, behind his belt. I mean, that's a lot to ask for. And again, we've had this conversation throughout this program. Craig Anderson is going to play a lot more than we think. I think he's going to be much more important than we think, because while we think and we know these young goalies, you know, Demko attached, there's Shestorkin, Sorokin, name your Russian, it seems, there's going to be blips. There's going to be struggles along the way, and it adds to the heightened importance, I would say, of having multiple netminders on your roster. So I hope I answered your question. I like Samsonov quite a bit, but I'm still tempering my expectations, because every game in that division is just going to be so difficult.
You've got my interest peaked on goaltending, because the whole thing is fascinating, and you brought it up. Like, when you're playing Detroit 8 times a year, it's like, okay, yeah, that's a division you want to target.
Feeding time.
And Andre, exactly. Yeah. It's Satshaw in Vancouver, Nick Alberga in Toronto, Pat Steinberg in Calgary. NHL preview show on the Sportsnet Radio Network in 5 minutes. Who is the best team in the North Division? We'll dive into that. But we're wrapping up our fantasy talk, and really, guys, go anywhere on this, because like you could ask one question, it leads into about 15 other conversations. Just throw out some names. Like there's two guys that are in the front of my mind in terms of guys that could have monster seasons in kind of different tiers. You already mentioned one of them, Nick, in Jack Eichel. I think the addition of Taylor Hall and just knowing what the expectations are in Buffalo, I think Eichel could be in for a massive season with the Sabres. And I wonder about a healthy Steven Stamkos in Tampa, going back to what we're talking about in terms of the Lightning being able to feed, and there are some more cupcake opponents in that division. I wonder if a healthy Stamkos without Nikita Kucherov there can be one of the go-to guys offensively again in Tampa. So those are just two guys at the front of mind for me, but go anywhere you want when focusing in on guys as we wrap up our fantasy chat.
Yeah, certainly you have to keep guys like that in mind, especially with opponents to feast on. You know, ultimately, I look to that West Division. You've got the trifecta there in California. All three teams we expect to miss the postseason in L.A., Anaheim, and the San Jose Sharks. You look to the Colorado Avalanche on paper, just tremendous, tremendous hockey team. Nathan MacKinnon, I think he's going to win the Hart Trophy. I'm not really going on a limb and saying that, but he clearly is going to be involved in the conversation. Gabe Landeskog's in a contract year there, so look out for a monster season. He's the captain of that team, and they've still yet to come to extension. Maybe they won't. Maybe they move on from Landeskog. I think if there's one fantasy stock to look at that could improve exponentially throughout this season, guys, and I'm sure you'll jump into the conversation, it's probably Rasmus Dahlin, because I don't know how you feel about the Buffalo Sabres. Got my wonders about Linus Allmark and Carter Hutton in between the pipes, and I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs, but that team's going to score. You have Taylor Hall, the attachment with Jack Eichel, Eric Staal comes in there, Victor Olofsson, Sam Reinhart, not to mention Dylan Cousins, and maybe Casey Mittelstadt can find his way. I think Rasmus Dahlin could turn into a blue chip fantasy stud this season, guys.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought up Dahlin, because he...
You own him.
You know, I don't own him. I wish I owned him, actually. I wish I owned him. You know, and I got to say, though, when you look at Dahlin, he came in and played really well as a rookie. And he was 18 years old, right? And yeah. Quinn Hughes had a better rookie season, I thought, than Dahlin did the previous year. But it doesn't mean that overall that Dahlin can't be one of the best defensemen in the league. He was 18 when he came and did what he did. Last year he got injured and had an up-and-down season because of it. There's potential that Dahlin entrenches himself in the same group that we talk about, Hughes, Makar, Heiskanen, you know, Charlie McAvoy. We can have Dahlin in that discussion as soon as this season. Two players with high value I want to mention that I think, and you mentioned Carolina Hurricanes a little bit, Nick, especially on the back end with Dougie Hamilton. Sebastian Aho and Andrei Svechnikov,
yeah,
they have the potential to be 100-point players in NHL over a full season, and at some point, they're going to flirt with that mark or even exceed that mark. And if I'm looking to take bets on high-level guys, those are two players for the Hurricanes that I keep a very close eye on.
Check out Nick Alberga, sportsnet.ca. He's got you covered, fantasy hockey leading up into the season and all season long. Some absolutely great finds that you can have in some of Nick's work as well. Check him out on sportsnet.ca. Nick with us in Toronto at Sportsnet 590. We got Satshaw at Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. My name is Pat Steinberg here at Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This is the NHL preview on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Here's a fun question. Best team in the North Division. As we continue along on our NHL preview show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, we know that for the first time ever, all seven Canadian teams will be playing exclusively against one another as the 56-game NHL schedule starts tomorrow across the league. Toronto starting tomorrow, Vancouver starting tomorrow, Calgary goes on Thursday, and that's what we're diving into right now. Let's take a little bit of a deeper look at the North Division, focus in on a few of the teams we haven't gone deep into as well. Pat Steinberg, Satshaw, Nick Alberga along with you on our NHL preview show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. There it is. Best team. If I had to back you up against the wall, Nick, and you needed to give me one answer, who's the best team in this very tight Canadian North Division?
Well, firstly, Canucks and Flames fans, stay out of my mentions. You know, you guys know this, working in your markets, you praise your team. It's like, oh, here comes another homer. I just think on paper, and again, it's important to stress, on paper, the Maple Leafs have the best roster in this country. It's tough to find bona fide stars the way they have slotted in their top six. Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, John Tavares to an extent, William Nylander. I think they're much improved in the back end with the addition of TJ Brody and Zach Bogosian. And I think they're pretty decent in between the pipes as well with Frederick Anderson and Jack Campbell and Aaron Dell as the third slot of goaltender. So provided everybody can stay healthy and in that lineup, I do feel like Toronto is a team to beat. How do you feel, Sat?
Man, if you're being rational and doing a logical outlook for this season, you can't have any team but Toronto if you backs against the wall. Now, you can make a guess and project and all those sort of things and say a different team, and that's fine. I mean, hey, it's all predictions or whatever. But if you're trying to do an objective review and look at the strengths of the teams, it is Toronto number one. I do think Vancouver's pretty close. I think things click for Vancouver. They could be there vying for the spot. But, you know, backs against the wall, it's hard not to pick Toronto as at least being the favorite heading into the season.
Yeah, and I hate to ring unanimous, but when I've been ranking and going through all the seven teams in this division, there's one team that in all the different areas is consistently ranking top three in net, forward depth, top end forward, blue line, like everything you see Toronto rank near the top, and that's why I have to echo it. I do think on paper going into this season, Toronto Maple Leafs are the best team in the North Division, but who knows? Injuries happen, surprises happen, and we've never seen a schedule like this where, who knows, if all of a sudden one team has a bad matchup and they lose 8 of 9 against one team, I don't know if that's going to happen, but that completely alters things just like that. So, okay, so we're all unanimous on the Toronto Maple Leafs. We've gone deep on Toronto. We've done a deep dive on Vancouver and Calgary as well. Let's take a look at the four other teams we haven't spent a lot of time on so far in this NHL preview show. And let's start with the Ottawa Senators. And we've all kind of talked about how they might be the weak link, and yet they've made some significant moves. They brought in Matt Murray, and they signed him to a deal. Dadonov comes in, and a lot of people like that move. We know that Brady Tkachuk and Thomas Chabot lead this team in terms of their young, promising talent. Are we sleeping on the Senators a little too much right now, or are we not giving them enough credit heading into this season?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think they're a terrible hockey team, but they could be fun. I'm glad you brought up Dadonov, who, that's an underrated acquisition. He's going to help that power play in a big way. There is potential that the power play could be pretty good, and if you have a good power play with Chabot on the point, you have Tkachuk, you have Dadonov, there is something to work there. And obviously, you have the super rookie potentially in Team Stützle, who could be a big contributor as well. They're a fun team that could have a good power play that scores a lot of points. The defense, though, that's the big concern. I mean, God love Eric Gudbranson. But if he's on the shutdown, if he is playing with Chabot and you still have some other guys on that back and you still have Zaitsev, if you have Zaitsev and you have Gudbranson on the same back end and both guys are supposed to play significant roles for you, that's trouble. Ultimately, the defense is going to prevent the Senators from being a playoff team, but they're definitely not a laydown every night.
Yeah, I was gonna, you know, to add further. I think there's no gimme in this division. Clearly, what Ottawa will bring to the table is a much tougher opponent to play against. Clearly, with the additions of Austin Watson and Paquette and good Branson, I just think it's not going to be a walk in the park. Maybe the way it was the last couple of years. You know, Brady Tkachuk plays with some sandpaper as well. I think a dark horse rookie nobody's talking about is Josh Norris, who is centering their top line going into this season. Maybe just speaks to the lack of depth up the middle. That's why they got Derek Stepan and his contract from Arizona. But don't sleep on Josh Norris or Drake Batherson. They got a lot of unprovens, you know, in this league, and I think they have to be fair and, you know, temper their expectations clearly, and they got to be fair with the insulation of some of their younger players and be careful, you know, with their progression. But I you know, to echo the sentiments of you guys, I like the additions this team has made. Evgeny Dadonov is a very underrated player. I love him at the value they brought him in that contract. I think it was 3 years and $5 million per. And Tim Stützle, like, it's time to give him the keys to the car and see what he can do. And I think they're much better in between the pipes with Matt Murray. So my expectation is closer games. I think Ottawa is going to play more of a defensive style that we've seen the last couple of years, especially under DJ Smith. And they're going to hope for the best, but they're just looking for progression from some of their younger players.
I like if Matt Murray can return to the form that we, and I'm not even talking about those two runs to the Stanley Cup where he was unbelievable, but he was putting together a couple of really strong regular seasons. I know the injuries have always been a little bit of an issue, but if he can get back to that, I think that boots the competitive level to the Sens a whole lot more, because there you go. You've got a guy that can be in the conversation for a number one goalie, and so we'll see. I mean, that's a big-time question mark because Murray has not been as good as that the last couple of years, but if he can, there's just another example as to how this team could be better for the coming season. You know, Montreal is a team that was as busy as it comes during the offseason. Marc Bergevin brought in Josh Anderson and signed him. Tyler Toffoli signed there for 4 years. Joel Edmondson's in. Jake Allen comes in to help solidify things in net. And that was a pretty successful return to play, too, Nick. The Montreal Canadiens are a team that I think a lot of people, for good reason, are buzzing about coming into the season.
And rightfully so. Like, I think you look at first and foremost, and it's great to see Claude Julien back and healthy and coaching this team after the scare in the bubble. So that's great news off the bat. But, you know, they had cap room to work with. And I think that was a massive tool in this modern day world we live in right now with COVID. A lot of teams didn't want to spend. Montreal was willing to spend, and I think they did well on some of their moves. Clearly, moving Max Domi remains to be seen how he does with Columbus, but he wasn't long for Montreal. They bring in Josh Anderson, hasn't played a game in like a year, and they gave him a massive contract. This is their nucleus, so it better work, is what I'm saying when it comes to Montreal. I still have question marks, quite frankly, from an offensive standpoint. Mm-hmm. I think what this team is missing, you know, and I think I'd throw Ottawa in the conversation, they're missing that elite-level goal scorer, that elite-level playmaker. And who knows, maybe Kotkaniemi, maybe Suzuki, you know, elevate into that type of role. I think Thomas Tatar here is in a contract year, and I don't know if they have the money to make it work, so I think he moves on. I think they're missing that elite top six piece that maybe puts this team over the top. But from a defensive point of view, I like how they shape up maybe the best in this division. Ben Chiarot, Shea Weber, even an Alex Romanov here in a contract year. Can't wait to see him in the NHL. They gave Petrie money. They pretty much have everybody long-term, so a better workout. And again, the biggest X factor, as you guys very well know, the goaltending. I like their setup now. They have installation. They have somebody to spell Carey Price when need be and keep him fresh. And to have Carey Price and Jake Allen, I thought was a great utilization of cap space by Marc Bergevin.
You're absolutely right about the defense being strong. And under Claude Julien, their system play is going to be good. I mean, they may not have the best top six defense, but they may have the best plan for the top six defense, and they're going to play within themselves. And I like the depth they have. Maybe not the fastest D, but there's a lot there to work with, especially under Claude Julien's leadership as a head coach of that team and how well they play. The question I have, and you mentioned it, Nick, overall is a high-end ceiling. I like the Habs a lot, and this might seem a bit counterintuitive, but with how the Habs are built, I almost like them better in an 82-game season than I like them in a 56-game season, because I think over 82 games, they're going to be pretty solid, and they'll probably get to like 92, 94 points, and that'll keep you in the playoff race.
Yeah.
Do they have enough high-end scoring up front for them to go on a run early, right? And to cannot bloat up those points. Ultimately, when you look at this division, how many of these top-end teams have like a bona fide number one line and they have bona fide play drivers that are going to dominate offensively? Habs still don't have that. And unless they can do it by committee, that might prevent them from really being one of the top teams in this division.
Yeah, I'd say never underestimate Claude Julien in that system. But I just feel like Montreal's, you know, this roster is better suited for the playoffs, but you have to get to the playoffs, right? Like, you even look at their back end, and that's a great point to bring up. They're all like 7 foot. They're massive, right? But I just don't know if that's counterintuitive to this day and age. You know, I joked on social media, I'd never done that before, but I joked that this Montreal team was better suited to play in 2005 and not 2020. Especially, or 2021, I should say, especially in a league known about, you know, skill and speed as opposed to being heavy and hard to play against. So I've been wrong before, and hopefully I'm wrong from a Montreal point of view when it comes to that brand of play, because I think you look at this roster, it's better suited for the playoffs, but they have to get there first, right, Pat?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And look, you talk about never underestimating a Claude Julien coach team, and I agree. And I also don't I never underestimate a team with Carey Price as the backstop. And what we saw from Price in the return to play, again, it was what, a 10 game sample size, so it wasn't massive, but he looked like an elite goaltender that could steal a series against Pittsburgh and make him competitive against Philadelphia. And this is a guy that has returned to being that elite guy after a couple of blip years. So I think Montreal is going to be competitive. I don't see them as the top team in the North, but I would suggest that they're very much in the mix with the other six teams of the seven that we all kind of think are really close with one another. Nick Alberger in Toronto, Satcha in Vancouver, Pat Steinberg in Calgary. It's the NHL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. The Edmonton Oilers are, they're always the team that, look, they've got a vocal group of fans. They are a team that has had so much high-end talent go through there over the last decade. And yet we're talking about a team with very limited playoff success. And even for Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, just the one playoff series win. We know the high-end talent exists. We know that the return to play sat did not go very well in the bubble as they got upset by Chicago. Like, this is a team that we're waiting to get to that next level. And yet I don't know if we can be 100% confident that this is the year they get to that next level. There are still a lot of question marks surrounding this very talented Oilers team.
Absolutely. In theory, though, there is a pathway here. I mean, you know, we have to include Edmonton as one of those teams that could surprise and win the division. I mean, they have the firepower. When you have the best player on the planet and you have Leon Draisaitl as well, and you had the deadliest power play in the National Hockey League last season, you got a chance in this division, 100%. And I am intrigued by their forwards, actually, guys. Really intrigued by their forwards. If Kyle Turris can just be a dependable bottom six player, that shores up a big issue for you in your bottom six. And I'm really looking at, I love Kyler Yamamoto. And Nick, no, I do not own him in fantasy, but I do love Kyler Yamamoto. And he could be in line for a big year. So I actually like the makeup of their forward group a lot. Tyson Barry was everybody's favorite whipping boy in Toronto. But guess what he does for Edmonton? He provides a puck-moving defenseman that they sorely need on that back end. And you add him to a deadly power play as it is, offensively, Edmonton might spend even more time in the offensive zone. They might be even more deadly. I still worry about how they defend their own zone. But they're built to probably outscore their problems this season. They're a dangerous team in this division.
Yeah, obviously, I think as long as you have McDavid and Draisaitl, you're going to be okay. I just think, you know, you match this team around the league. I just don't know. You know, depth-wise, there's a lot of what-ifs. Yes, you pull Yarvi back in the mix. Kyle Turris, fresh off a buyout from the Nashville Predators. I have no clue what to expect there. Yamamoto and Draisaitl, that combo was terrific last year after the recall from Yamamoto in late December. Dominic Cahoon, by the way, has looked really good in that line so far, so we'll see if it comes and it continues here into the season. Ryan Nugent Hopkins, is in a contract year. How does that factor in everything? Connor McDavid. I just think there's a lot of questions, and I think we're understating the value of Oscar Klefbom to this team, right? He's done for the year. If you to take Klefbom out and add Tyson Barry in, I mean, that's, you know, I think you're going downhill from there. And goaltending, the reason why I don't like Edmonton making the playoffs in this division, I just have way too many question marks if you compare it to other teams in this division. But I totally agree. They have the two X factors in this league, and maybe, you know, two of the best players clearly in this league, in this world right now. And these guys are so good. they could probably likely get Edmonton to the playoffs. But again, I just really have a lot of wonders about this this roster.
It's so weird for me because if you look back and you talk to a lot of Oilers fans, yes, they ended up not being in the top four round robin in the return to play. Had they not lost on the final day of the NHL regular season to the Winnipeg Jets, they would have been a top four team. And they were able to do that because of their high-end talent. And so there's that one side of you. Like, these guys are so good, they can elevate that team to being, at the very worst, in some cases, a middle-of-the-pack team in the Western Conference when we played in that format. And then on the other hand, I'm with you, Nick. And Sat, you brought it up earlier. I worry a lot, not just about the goaltending, but whether or not Dave Tippett, the head coach, uses the goaltending correctly. There was one guy who was better last year and one guy that was worse, and yet that's not how the usage went. Koskinen's numbers were significantly better than Mike Smith's, yet Mike Smith got more than 50% of the games because there's that trust level. They go back to Arizona. And so I look at it, and I'm with you, Nick. Like, I worry about their goaltending. But if Dave Tippett can get away from the attachment he has to Mike Smith and he can use Koskinen as the 1A as opposed to the 1B, I do think their goaltending tandem could be a little bit better than what we saw last year.
Yeah, a lot of ifs, certainly, when it comes to that Edmonton team. And, you know, I just think it's fascinating from that point of view, just McDavid and Drysdale. I just, for the sake of hockey, I just want to see these guys in the spotlight of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, it's like they're wasting talent in Edmonton. These two, you know, never really getting anywhere. I know the one year they did sort of. But that's just my expectation, is that they field a good team. I think they have a good coach in Dave Tippett from a defensive point of view. But again, they tried their hardest, and you know, they've got some anchors on that roster. Why they really can't do much. They tried to adjust their goaltending. I know they were sniffing around a Markstrom, maybe even a Thomas Greiss. It just didn't happen. And now they run it back with just a tandem. I think both guys are, you know, I would say Mike Smith's a number three. I think Koskinen's a good number two goalie in this league, but they're missing, you know, that bona fide guy who can play those games for you. Because I think Koskinen, what he has proven throughout his career, even before, you know, he went to Europe and then now came back with the Edmonton Oilers, that he could have a nice string of a couple games in a row. But, you know, once you get to 4, 5, 6, you know, he starts to slump big time. So I think they need to rectify that issue, and that's a long-term issue. And I think to answer the global question from this two-hour show is, like, who's feeling the most heat to make the Stanley Cup playoffs? And it's crazy to think, but I don't know if the Oilers are just yet because of, you know, Ken Holland, how he's got plenty of contract, you know, left on his contract, right?
Yeah, and he hasn't really spent a lot of capital, right? I mean,
exactly.
He made the one trade at the deadline, trading a couple of picks, and it ends up not being a great trade for Anthony Seau, because he did give up a second, right? And there was another pick involved as well. But he hasn't spent a ton of capital, a huge contract or a big trade. And until you screw up a big trade or you screw up a big free agent, you're not going to be on the hot seat. This is kind of a push here. The bigger question for Edmonton really is, do you have a good enough season that Connor McDavid doesn't ruffle feathers as soon as the season ends? I mean,
you're right.
You have to make sure that you're managing the best player on the planet and that he doesn't lose faith in the direction of your organization. To me, that's the biggest issue at stake for that team this season.
Okay, finally the Winnipeg Jets, guys. And we saw the Jets go out in four games to the Flames in the return to play in the qualification round, but they were so ravaged by injuries. Mark Scheifele, their number one center, goes down a couple shifts into that game. Then Laine gets hurt. Like, this team could not catch a break. Kyle Connor didn't step up. Blake Wheeler had his struggles after those guys went down, but they were so ravaged by injuries in their series against Calgary. I don't know if that can be a real barometer as to where they are. Are we, like, I take a look at their forward group, Sat. I take a look at the depth that they're able to have, and obviously they have the reigning Vezina Trophy winner in Connor Hellebuyck. I just feel like Winnipeg seems to be a little forgotten, and I wonder if we're sleeping on the Jets a little bit.
Dude, I'm so glad you brought it up. I think I'm going to leave Winnipeg out of my top four, but they're the team that terrifies me, guys. I mean, when you look at it from just a matchup perspective, they're a team that could cause a lot of problems for how these teams are built, especially, you know, Vancouver's more of a skilled team, right? Same thing with Toronto, for instance. Montreal does have some heft now that they've added Anderson. They have some big defensemen, you know, to add Edmondson as well. But that's not a team that's going to just be heavy the entire time. Winnipeg can be. Look at how McCalgary's built. Look at how Ottawa's built. As long as the goaltending is good and they play a good system, that's a team that could just grind all these other squads. And matchup-wise, they pose problems. Look at the teams the Canucks have had trouble with in the past. Look at the teams Toronto has had trouble against. And you're playing Winnipeg 8 times, not 10 times this season. They are a team that is not going to be roster-wise at the same level as the top few teams of this division, but they could pose the biggest matchup issue. And if they do play that well, they could just be a terrible matchup for so many teams in this division. I'm with you. Like, this is a team that we probably sleep on, but if things align, they could be a nightmare.
Yeah, you hit it. They're fast and heavy, and I can't wait for the first Calgary-Winnipeg matchup, if you know what I'm saying, a la Mark Scheifele coming back from that tough injury, right? And he's got, I'm sure, some words to say to Calgary and Matthew Tkachuk and company. But I just like the composition of this roster. Like, I even like a motivated Patrick Laine. Well, I doubt he's going to be there long term. The dude scores 30 in his sleep, and there's just always that ceiling, that potential. He can you know, start to score 40, 45. I mean, the sky is the limit for Patrick Laine. I think their bottom six is better than people give them credit for. They're heavy. They're tough to play against. I think those are all the factors you want in this day and age, and they play with speed and pace. Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, Blake Wheeler, Kyle Connor. It's one of the more underrated goal scorers in this league that nobody talks about. I think it's going to hurt, you know, losing Brian Little, not having him probably for the rest of his career. I think he's finished. But to get Paul Stastny back in the mix, who was great, you know, for guys like Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor is understated right now. And even on the back end, Ville Heinola coming off a really good showing at the World Junior, really, really impressed last year to start the season before he was sent back to Europe. I wonder if he factors in there. Neil Pionk, I thought, was a great pickup in that deal for Jacob Trouba that nobody really talked about. One of the more quiet power play quarterbacks in this league, I think, is going to be huge. Another year for Josh Morrissey. And then it's tough to discount a team with the reigning and defending Vezina Trophy winner in Connor Hellebuyck. My wonder comes behind Hellebuyck. Can Laurent Boissois be the one from 2 years ago? Not so much the one from last year, right? But I do agree with you guys. I think Winnipeg will be a very, very difficult team to play in this season, but I actually have them on the outside looking in for my playoff scenario.
The NHL preview show is rolling on across the Sportsnet Radio Network alongside Nick Alberga and Sat Shah. My name is Pat Steinberg. We've spent so much time digging around in this North Division, and why wouldn't we, with all seven Canadian teams playing in one division? That's going to be our big focus, and I'm actually really curious as to how the year goes along, how all of us in our different markets, like, how do the other divisions get ingested, because none of the teams that we cover are playing any of these teams this year. But you've got the West, you've got the Central, you've got the East. Like, what intrigues us about these other three divisions? It's a super general question, Sat, but like there are some really interesting storylines with the other 24 teams split into three divisions across the league.
Yeah, and Nick kind of touched on this before, but I love the East Division, right? Like, the only team in that East Division, you're kind of like, it's probably the New Jersey Devils. But even the Devils, there is a pathway for them to be competitive. I've liked Ty Smith for a long time. He made the team, and, you know, we haven't seen him play at all, and he's going from the WHL straight to the National Hockey League. How long does it last? But there is some potential on that back end. You know, Will Butcher getting back on track again, and you add Ty Smith into the fold, maybe PK gets a bit better. I look at that, the composition of the back end for the Devils, even with Damon Severson being there, I do see a path for them to be okay defensively, and if goaltending kind of holds up. And offensively, like, there is some stuff there. Like, even the New Jersey Devils, I kind of view the Devils guys as the way we view the Ottawa Senators, kind of, right? And even they could be a bit frisky. The East Division is going to be very similar to the North Division with how much parity there is. And a really good hockey team is going to be out on the outside looking in. So I am super excited about watching the battles in the East Division this season.
Yeah, and you look, you know, at the West Division too, guys. You know, I think the Cup could go through that division ultimately this season. I really like Vegas. I really like Colorado. I like St. Louis, even though they lost Alex Pietrangelo to bring in Torrey Krug already to one of the best power play units in the league, I think is a win. The Hoffman deal was an absolute steal, not to mention the expectation of potentially having Vladimir Tarasenko back for the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's win-win-win for Doug Armstrong and company. You mentioned Jordan Binnington in a contract year. Robert Thomas is another guy I expect to take a step in the right direction. So that division's going to be tough, and I think they're going to run roughshod over the other teams, you know, Arizona, you know, Los Angeles, Anaheim, San Jose. I'm curious to see who finishes off that division, because I think those three are pretty much locks that I mentioned. Number four, I think a sleeper team could be the Minnesota Wild, guys like Kevin Fiala and Kirill Kaprizov. You guys know, and Pat especially, about, you know, Cam Talbot. He's the number one there, and what that means for that team. I always ultimately look at teams that always seem to make the Stanley Cup playoffs, and two are in that division, Minnesota and the San Jose Sharks. And I think those two will vie for that last position. In the Central, I think Tampa's going to win that division. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I got a lot of questions about Dallas. Carolina's a sleeper team that nobody ever talks about. They're really, really good. And I think there's a couple teams that are just going to get beat up all year in that division, and that's Chicago and Detroit. And then wrapping in the East, your guess is as good as mine. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, Boston slips. And there's got to be that year that Buffalo makes it too, right, guys?
Eventually, right? Like, you would hope so. Eventually, yeah. You would think, and there's a lot there that would suggest. But my biggest question with the Buffalo Sabres is there's been so much turmoil within that organization that when you have that much turnover consistently, it's hard to get your footing. And I think they almost need a couple of years where things don't change for them to get comfortable. And they may be a year away from it, but potential-wise, asset-wise, there's a lot there, and especially with how the division lines up, that they could surprise.
One thing I'll say about Buffalo is I just hope there's enough that happens positively this year to keep Jack Eichel there, because I would really like to keep him, to see him stay rather in Buffalo and to be able to realize some success there, because man, when Buffalo is good, there's not a more fun hockey market to play in. But when they're bad, well, they're bad. And it's never fun playing on a bad team. And it just has not, he has not been able to experience any success there. So I hope that there's enough success this year to keep him. The last thing that I'll say, guys, as we start to wrap up, is, like, I know the West has got some non-sexy teams. California ain't what it was. But if you're telling me that I get to see Colorado, Vegas 8 times, Vegas, St. Louis 8 times, and Vegas, Colorado 8 times, sign me up for that, because I think it could be absolutely outstanding. Some of the other matchups, maybe not. But those 24, whatever it is, yeah, I think that could be absolutely outstanding. Well, that'll do it. Want to say thanks so much to Cam Barra, our producer, for putting this together. Outstanding work on our NHL preview show on the technical side. You can follow Nick Alberga at Sportsnet 590 The Fan on Twitter at The Golden Muzzy. Catch him on Hockey Central at noon and Toronto Maple Leafs pre- and post-game coverage. You've got Sat Shaw at Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver on Twitter at Satyr Shaw. You can catch him pre- and post-game on Canucks games on Sportsnet 650 and on the program with Andrew Walker. My name is Pat Steinberg on Twitter at Fan960Steinberg, on the big show on Sportsnet 960, and once again on pre- and post-game for Calgary Flames broadcast. That was fun, boys. Thanks for doing that.
Thanks for having me, guys. Great.
A lot of fun, man. This is fun. I really enjoyed it.
Could do that. 2 straight hours of talking hockey. For Cam, for Sat, for Nick, I'm Pat. This has been the NHL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.